It's Boss Bear Radio, episode 113. I'm Griffin Hoffman, and with the music this weekend from Okay, got that all out.
Did you have a little seizure there?
I was just speeding up really fast. I kept saying, I was going to say somebody's name who isn't here, which doesn't make any sense. But Jeff Brewer, Jamie Scherer, and Axel Anderson.
Yours truly.
Yeah.
Jeff, you didn't say anything when you said your name.
I don't know who I am anymore.
That was compulsory. You're out of the club.
Get out.
Through the magic of semi-transcontinental teleportation, we can all be together tonight.
Yes, this is the Alt-Source East full reunion.
That's right. Or otherwise, as I like to call it, welcome to my V basement.
What does that mean? I don't understand.
I totally don't follow.
Is that a sexual reference?
No, like...
God, I hope so.
Like virtual basement.
Because
that's where
is
I
that
record.
Is like the same as a sex dungeon?
I'm pretty sure I subscribe to vbasement.com.
They put out new videos every Wednesday.
Yeah. That's my favorite sub form of 4chan, actually.
I heard the other day that 4chan voted Kim Jong-un Person of the Year, Time Person of the Year.
Oh, they do that every year with someone hilarious like that.
That's great. Do they talk about video games on 4chan?
Yeah.
They
have a whole video game board.
V is a video game board.
Oh, V?
V-basement. Yeah. It was a multi-layer joke, but...
Okay.
Pearls among swine.
No one thinks I belong here anymore.
You guys probably use Reddit, right? I mean, that's what the cool people do these days.
No.
I don't. I'm familiar with it, though. I know about it.
I mean, Jeff, you use Gaff because you're crazy. Yeah. We're crazy together.
Yes.
But I just assume, Reddit is what normal people use.
I use Dig. In 2008.
Are you a member of the Dig Nation?
I watched Dig Nation. I watched it until it ended. Because I'm a tool.
What about Reddit, Griffin?
I'm just curious. I was just... Okay. I mean, yeah. Do you understand it? I don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't understand the I am a... What is that?
Ask me anything.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I like
the
ask me anything.
Oh my
yeah.
God!
Oh, even I know about ask me anything.
Well, I know what the. I didn't know what the it stood for.
Jamie's getting kicked out. Get out of your own house, Jamie.
Speaking
and then
of,
I don't go on, Griffin.
I was gonna say, speaking of 2000s jokes, I'm sorry, but we need to put the cap out your torch, and you need to leave the island.
Damn it. Hey, that's still going, buddy.
Well, it's still the 2000s
one.
That's probably true.
let's talk about The Last of Us, because I love that game.
Yeah.
Well, wait, but before we talk about it, I haven't finished, so don't spoil anything, Griff.
I haven't finished either.
Oh, okay. I'm probably furthest along then.
Yeah. You probably are. I've been having a hard time playing it, and I just got to the part where you find the board games and there's Uncharted and Jack and Daxter.
I don't think I'm there yet.
Wait, where is that? I don't remember seeing those.
It's in a toy shop. I took pictures.
Oh. With Henry and his brother?
Henry Gale. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I missed that.
And I missed it too.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so bummed that I missed that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you're having trouble playing it? Why?
Well, just like fatigue, Yeah, I get playing. I play for like an hour or 2 hours, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good now. I'm either falling asleep or I'm like, I would like to go play some Animal Crossing. Like, I just turn over and I see my dresser, and I'm like, oh. Or I see like a dresser in the world, or like a chair or some piece of furniture, and I'm like, huh. Yeah, I would.
It's such a good like 1-2 punch. It's like Last of Us and then Animal Crossing are like on completely different ends of the spectrum.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But together, they're like the perfect...
It's like
perfect
poison and antidote, launch. You're just like, you take one, and it's like, oh, God, this is... And then you go to the other one, and you're better now. I feel better.
I just have the one.
Does that work the other way around? Like, you're playing Animal Crossing, and you're like, oh, God, and then you go play The Last of Us, and you're like, ah.
No.
When you just play The Last of Us, as I've been doing, you're just really thankful that we live in a society.
Yeah.
I just realized this morning, no one has ever really tried hard to kill me individually. Like I've never ran for my life from anything. And that's awesome. And The Last of Us has made me appreciate that part of my life. But it really does make me feel terrible. I can't stand the,
Yeah.
And Jeff came over, and I was in the middle of it, and the S is hitting the F, and it's just I need to be playing.
What the hell are you doing?
Podcast?
We're allowed to swear.
Okay.
I keep thinking we're not allowed to, but then we are.
Yeah, this is the internet, bro.
But Griffin is an adult, and he has a son.
There's an explicit tag on the podcast, you know. So.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You can talk about S's and F's as much as you want.
All right. Well, the sunflowers were hitting the flashbang.
Wait. Have you guys ever watched the edited version of Snakes on a Plane?
No.
Wait, hold on. The curse edits in them are amazing. You know that Enough is Enough? He goes, enough is enough. I've had it with these monkey biting snakes. On this Monday to Friday plane.
That's actually, yeah, something my wife has seen before. She loves quoting those awful TV edits of it.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Speaking of TV edits, if you noticed in last week's podcast, I bridged the two segments with the Kidz Bop version of Macklemore's Thrift Shop. So if you haven't heard that whole song before, I highly recommend it.
I was listening, Griffin, and I was like, what the hell is this? Does he think this is the original or something?
I like it. You should continue to mine gold like that.
Yeah. Gold, yeah. It's mine. I've got a wealth of it.
So I've decided that The Last of Us is my favorite game.
Yeah.
It is like my, I think it's just paced really well. I feel like I just love the interface. I love how he has to take his backpack off and take new weapons out. Yeah. I love how he has to make his, like, his bandages. I love his face, his beard. It's luscious and it's got just the right amount of gray. And
I can get lost in those eyes.
They should make a Just for Men with just Joel's face on it. Just for Joel.
Joel for Men.
Yeah, I totally agree with Jamie though. I love all the like limitations it puts on you. Like I love how you have to hold X and wait like 3 seconds to switch your weapon. And I refuse to upgrade my holsters because I don't want that to be easier. Mm. And like I'm playing without listen mode, and like I just love the tension. I love how disempowered you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
I love how like three guys can just kill you.
And on a related note. So I'm at a point that's very, very difficult, and I died so many times that the game was like, and I'm playing on normal. The game was like, you should probably try it on easy. And I was like, okay, game. So I put it on easy, and even easy is still a challenge. The game doesn't really turn down the AI at all. What it does on easy mode is it gives you more items, and it gives you different like. Scenarios like I noticed that this one zombie on normal mode that would always come by me he didn't on easy, so it's like it's the best easy mode possible. Jeff, we're watching Hook right now, and we're at the point where Robin Williams is tripping balls and he's spiraling through space. Oh, he just jizzed on children. That has nothing to do with The Last
of Us. No, it doesn't.
So Jeff went over all the reasons why I've been advised that I should not play The Last of Us.
Oh, I'd love to hear these.
Because, well, Jamie and I were in the car. We went to the city to get dim sum.
Yes.
On
it gave me
that?
Butt problems.
he had substantial butt problems. which required me to drive home rather quickly.
Yes. He did that admirably.
Yeah, we were just talking about how, you know, it's kind of like an older Resident Evil in the way that the controls sort of impose that kind of powerlessness, and, you know, that kind of shit drives me up the wall, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
See, I happen to think the controls are really awesome. I think they're really tight. They're not like Resident Evil. It's more like when you pull out a gun, like your aim box is big. So, like, it's just kind of expected that you're going to miss. And also, like, just the act of, like, switching weapons takes a long time. And there's, like, a lot of zombies running at you. So switching weapons will fuck you up. Like, you'll hit the wrong button. Like, you'll hit left instead of right to pull your weapon out. And you're like, right. Fuck! Zombies are going to eat me.
So, like, the guns have an aiming circle?
Yeah.
And when you pull the trigger, your bullet could go anywhere inside that circle, and it's done randomly?
Potentially, yeah.
I don't know exactly how
it works. Doesn't feel like that.
Joel has a lot of sway. That's one thing that gets it.
Which you can spec out of.
Okay.
Yes. So it may not be that the circles are too big, but Joel will sway a lot. Aiming is just like a tense process.
No,
it's not so much an impossible process. It's just tense.
I think, Axel, that it is randomized. Like, it does have that Mass Effect 1 feel of, like, you 100% sight in your shot, and there is still a very tiny probability that bullet is going to go astray. Because that reticle never gets down to, like, that Call of Duty, you know, pencil tip point. Yeah. There is still margin of error. And then, you know, it's just like any subtle movement you make, and the AI is kind of erratic in how they're, like, they're not standing still a lot of the time, so you don't have that opportunity to sight them in.
So there
is a lot of margin for error on both the player side, and then I also believe, you know, because the game is rolling some dice when you take those shots too.
Yeah.
But it's not to say headshots are impossible. You know, if you do get in close and you do, you know, set them in properly, you will shoot them in the head. It's just in the heat of battle, there's no way you're going to just whip out your pistol and kind of just do this, you know, hip shot of an instant kill. You're not going to do it.
No 360, no scope headshot.
Well, you can upgrade weapons to have scopes.
Yes.
So you can. And you get a weapon that comes with a scope.
It's broken, yeah, but you can pick... Oh, you mean the...
Yeah, so there's different... I mean, if you want to stand back and snipe, you can. I mean, it's not as good as being stealthy and stabbing people because you don't have an unlimited amount of bullets.
Yeah, you only have, like, 10 bullets for one gun.
And I have to say, like, the thing that is just so amazing about this game is that in other games, you feel cool. Like, you feel like a badass. When you take out a whole room of guys and you did it without, like, being seen. In this game, you feel like a badass when you, like, skirt by with, like, an iota of health left.
Yeah.
And, like, that's just so much better than I don't know. I'm so scared.
I think maybe it's just my play style, and it's, like, all the Metal Gear Solid that's conditioned me to want to have no alerts.
And it's like,
you know, when I'm playing through a room and it's like I see some guy and I'm like, I get my line all set up, like I figure out how I'm going to take all these guys down, and then, you know, Ellie hits a bottle and stabs a guy, or you know, I topple a box over and I raise somebody's attention, you know, it's a mistake on my side, and then I'm like, well, crap, now I may as well just restart this. But what I've been trying to force myself to do is just, like, say no, let's continue with the combat, because the game does two things really well. You can still just brute force your way through encounters. Like, you can, you can do some damage. Like, you can take guys out. You can also run away and hide and kind of reset the counter. Exactly. They're not going to, like, well, it's all clear, sir. Return to patrol. Like, it doesn't have that Metal Gear Solid stupidity, but it does have that, like, okay, now things are different. They're a little calmer. They're not running all over the place.
Yeah, I think it does a better job than almost any game I've seen of, like, if you break stealth, like, you can quickly run behind something and it feels so fluid. Like, like, you're in stealth, kind of. Like, you can grab dudes and stealth kill them from where you are, but they're still looking for you. And it's like this really nice balance of, like, combat and stealth and moving between them fluidly. And, like, you have to, because you're gonna get discovered sometimes.
Yeah, of course. Yep. I mean, hypothetically, you could probably get through, you know, 70% of the encounters without getting seen. I don't even know. Like, I think there's some of the infected stuff that you just can't get through.
Oh, no.
Stealthily.
You guys are going to have a hell of a time. There are some rooms that and I see the path. I see what you would need to do to get through it with 100% stealth. And it is, like, it takes some real skill. It's possible, but for me, I take out one or two guys stealth, and then it's just a clusterfuck.
The cool thing, though, is, like, that's what I used to do in Uncharted, but with Uncharted, once you broke stealth, that was it. Like, it's like, okay, everyone knows exactly where you are all the time.
Yeah.
But they fixed that. They fixed that in 3 to some degree, and they fixed it hugely in this game. And they really nailed it. Like, the balance between, like I said, combat and stealth.
I love how certain enemies. So being stealthy for a clicker is different than being stealth yes, before runner. Yes,
yes. When they put them together, that's when it gets really interesting.
Yeah, I think that The Last of Us, if anything, has some of the greatest enemy AI design and mix-ups that any game has had to date.
Yeah.
Yes, with your dudes running in front of enemies and nobody caring. That's hilarious.
Well, the thing is, in the beginning of the game, I had my friends running out and no one would notice or care. But later in the game, same thing happened to me, Griffin. Ellie ran up against the box and knocked a bottle over, and then everyone was like, "What the fuck was that?" And so
I think I've been raising a bad Ellie in that she'll just like run out ahead and just stab a guy in his leg, and I'm like, "Oh Jesus!"
I think the stuff, the animations,
like when my Tamagotchi has gone bad.
Have you noticed like there'll be a zombie on your back. You'll be trying to get it off. Ellie will run up, grab a bottle, break it, and stab the zombie. Mm-hmm. And like the animations are so good. And when you're being stealthy, if you'll notice, Joel, there's enough space like in between Joel and the wall so that Ellie can come and crouch.
That is
like
my favorite touch in the entire game. That is no. It's like the Uncharted 2, like Nate, the Phantom wall touch. Like, you know, whenever he got to like a railing or a wall and he just start putting his hand out a little bit and you're like, "Ha, that makes total sense." I love that so much in The Last of Us when she kind of just like sneaks right in between your arm and the wall and you're like, "Oh, man." It just it looks so good and it just makes so much sense for that interaction to occur.
Did you play Tomb Raider, Griff?
No, I refuse to play Tomb Raider.
I really like Tomb Raider.
I'm sure it's great.
On moral grounds?
Yes, on moral grounds.
Which one? What are they?
Why is that?
The disingenuous marketing campaign that was waged against the average male using Laura's baby fat and helpless woman to appeal to a demographic, which the marketing team has come out and said, "We did this on purpose."
Yeah. No, that's really brave.
So I made a statement last year when that happened that I will not play Tomb Raider because of that. So I'm standing my ground.
I think it's a great game, but that's definitely true. And the game is really guilty of just beating the shit out of her.
Yeah.
And it's like really, and she like in the first 5 seconds of the game, she gets a bone through her belly, and she just walks it off. Then later, a couple minutes later, bear trapped to the leg, walks it off.
Right.
It's like it doesn't make any sense. But that I think that's a pretty good game, and I think that game did the same thing. Like when she gets close to a wall, she touches it. And like, there's a lot of tiny things in her animations that convey that sense of reality. But I was telling Jeff, this game does everything that I wanted that game to do better. Like in terms of the survival stuff, like it just does it so much better. And this game also does, like in terms of the story, what I wanted Infinite to do.
Yeah.
With the guy and the girl.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it does it so much better, even though I loved Infinite also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, and I wrote this in some of our notes, but in some ways, like when I was playing it, I was like, "Hold on a minute! Like this is like what I used to play RPGs for. Like this is like where I have to go now if I want to get like what I used to get out of RPGs."
Mm-hmm.
Because RPGs, like they don't like at least Japanese RPGs offer like terrible stories now.
Yeah, but, I guess I don't follow that. Yeah, you have to sell me a bit on that. How JRPGs are similar to The Last of Us story.
I guess I don't know, like the story being delivered through cutscene to some degree. Something about it, I got this feeling. It just like reminded me of like the RPGs I used to play when I was younger, and I don't know how else to describe it except like you have like a party, you progress. I don't know. Something about it just really reminded me of it. And I can't really put my finger on why.
It's not the story itself, but it's just the way that I feel when I'm playing the game and the attachment that I have to the characters and the like you said, the sense of progression.
It reminds me, as somebody who's never played D&D before, of a D&D campaign where it's like, you know, nothing ever turns out right. Everything gets increasingly more difficult. You come and go against it or with other adventurers. The story keeps going and keeps plotting, and you're collecting things and you're improving both as a player and as a character. But like, it doesn't have that stupidity and juvenility of a JRPG.
It doesn't have that. But there things will happen. I'm not going to say anything But and we can talk about next week. The game takes some turns, and it's reminding me a lot of some JRPGs. We'll talk about about it next week.
Okay.
But
do you fight God? Spoilers. Do you fight God?
No, I don't mean in terms of that. We'll talk about it next week. I don't want to spoil
I'm very
anything.
Interested because it just kind of came to me, and I can't really articulate exactly why right now, but if we could have a more candid discussion once we've all finished it about what that might be and why that's happening.
I think what Jeff means more is just like he used to turn to Japanese games for the quality of the characterization.
Yeah, pretty much.
And now now it's like Zack eats hair. It's like I don't Japanese games aren't doing it for me anymore.
Yeah,
I get that. I can appreciate it from that
yeah, the
angle.
Depth of the characters, like you don't see that in a WRPG usually. Like well, you can make your own character in a WRPG.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
What?
I've just never heard anybody say, or have I ever read WRPG?
Neither have I. Actually.
But I absolutely love it. It's like TPS.
I like it too. Okay. I knew what you meant immediately, and I just assumed that it was a thing.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, right. So yeah. So I think that in WRPGs, like it's more focused on player choice.
Like wrestling.
I want to make a wrestling RPG.
Welcome to Wednesday night. It's WRPG.
Oh man.
Yeah. So it's more about player choice and player agency. But this something about the linear story, the depth of characterization, there's some element of like exploring the world, and like you have some amount of freedom, but all the major story beats are pretty much predetermined. Mm-hmm. It reminds me so much of what I loved about JRPGs.
It reminds me of 90s JRPGs because 90s JRPGs knew how shitty the world was. And they were like, look how shitty the world is. Look at it. It's so shitty. And this game is like the same thing. Like, the world kind of sucks. You guys should check that out. Think about that.
Interestingly, the game is apparently, well, I don't know if this is actually true, but the game, Japanese people are like raving about the game on boards, on like 2chan and stuff.
Huh. 2chan?
People, yeah.
It's Japanese
4chan. Or 2CH. Tucci. But yeah, they're raving about it, and they're talking, you know, they really like it. So maybe there is something in there that resonates with the Eastern crowd.
If there were any country where Joel for Men could actually happen, it would be Japan.
I could see that man selling Whoppers.
Oh man, I hope that in the Japanese version there's like a little, like you befriend like a little mushroom man or something. Like they just break it somehow.
I hope that on an unrelated note, we can all just go back to Japan together.
Yes, I would love that. I've literally been dreaming about that. But so what do you want to say anything? Are we moving?
I don't know much more we can talk about The Last of Us without getting into Last of Us spoilers.
Yeah.
What's the statute of limitations on that?
I don't have any statute of limitations for spoilers. It's just I'm still playing the game, so don't talk to me about it.
No.
You fucker.
Yeah. My dad spoiled something for Jeff. I'm not going to tell you what, but I told my dad came upstairs. He's like, dreamy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Dad, shut up. This just happened. Shut up. And my dad's like, okay. And then he stumbles downstairs. And then later, Jeff comes by, and my dad's like, oh my God, this just happened. In the game. Also, my dad watched don't tell him I told you this. I made my dad watch the opening of The Last of Us, and he cried.
I told him already.
Oh, you told him. So,
That was an awesome opening.
That's good.
Yeah.
They like. Should we? Are you cool with having some minor spoilers, Axel?
I don't think the opening is. I think we should move on, first of all. I don't really know how much time you can spend on Heavy Rain Part 2.
Oh, no. You didn't. Okay, we'll talk about it some other time.
Yeah, some other time.
I think we should talk about Blood Dragon because that's what I've been playing.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. Yes. Hit us with it.
Well, it's basically more Far Cry 3, which is the best thing imaginable.
It's a better Far Cry 3.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's more ridiculous for sure.
It's a better Far Cry 3 because it's the same mechanics of Far Cry 3, but wrapped in a stupider and therefore better story. Like a story that knows it's stupid instead of its dumb Canadian stupidity.
Right. The operative word there being stupider.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's tremendous. The writing is spot on, and every character that you encounter, and even the main character, is an 80s action movie trope.
Mm-hmm.
There's one scene, I don't think this is going to be giving too much away, but because that's not a spoiler kind of game, but so your character is the army sergeant, you know, very self-serious soldier trope.
He's like a cyborg, right?
He's a cyborg, yeah. Mark IV Cyber Commando is what he calls himself. But he runs into, like, the young, attractive lady scientist who's too young to have a doctorate in any field trope. And she offers him, like, this concoction of nanomachines to improve his performance. She was like, this will make you more like the main bad guy. So just inject this thing. And he's like, no thanks, doc. Drugs are for losers.
That is amazing.
The humor, I mean, the humor definitely parodies the 80s B movies, which is fun. However, I disagree, Axel. I think the writing can be a little close to Duke Nukem in how stupid it is. It's the whole package which does
it
for me.
It's over the top stupid.
Yeah.
It's over the top self-referential stupid.
Okay, I mean, yeah, it's just like there are some things that are just bad in it, like calling, yeah, there's just some not good parts in there.
Well, some parts are less funny than others, but...
Can you talk more? Because I haven't played very much. So, like, what's an example of a part that you thought maybe crossed the line, or...
Are you, oh, me?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think anything crosses the line, but I think, you know, what makes that game so fun is the setting in it that it's in, like, the dumb scan lines that are across the screen. You know, the cybernetic sharks that bite you when you're jumping in the water. The fact that you have to hold your breath to snipe, but you can breathe infinitely underwater. There's just some, like, dumb, really awesome, subtle touches. Like, anything in the menus has some pretty chuckle-worthy writing for it. But then, you know, a lot of the jokes in the game are just like... Let's put this explosive on that wall, and then it's like, blow the wall up. It's like, damn, that was a lot of explosive. Man. You're like, oh, yeah, you're right. You're right, guy. I mean,
like there were a lot of, like, knowingly horrible puns, which I'm cool with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just don't think that it's – it is a super fun game to play, and it's better than Far Cry 3 just because it's a little more linear. It's a little bit more, like, self-referential and stupid. But it does have some issues in just how stupid it can be sometimes. Like, it gets close to that realm of, like, okay, so it's like you put a tutorial in your game and then you make fun of having a tutorial in your game. That still doesn't change the fact that you put a really stupid, unnecessary tutorial in the game.
Oh, but I like that.
Yeah, I saw that. Hilarious. It was hilarious. It's okay. So funny.
I enjoyed the tutorial.
Because the tutorial, it's clearly just like the Wii Fit Trainer. It's like a giant fuck you to people who bitch about that stuff.
But the thing is that's funny because it's never been done before. It can never be done again.
No.
If it's ever done again, it will actively piss me off. But I've never seen that before.
Right. I've never had the first screen in a tutorial say press enter to confirm your ability to read.
Yeah, no, there's some good beats for sure. But yeah, I mean, right? that's kind of how I feel about the whole game as a whole. It's like, yeah, it's good. The writing for the game as a whole, like, it's good. It's funny, but it's like sometimes it just kind of strikes me as this is getting a little, like, what is this game trying to do? Is it trying to be referentially funny? Is it trying to be stupid funny? Is it trying to, you know, have its own sense of humor by making fun of game tropes or nerds or whatever? Like, I don't really get it. But I think, yeah, it's funny. And I'm not going to... You can tell me more about Blood Dragon because I don't want to talk anymore about it. Because it's a great game. You should play it.
Yeah. Right. Well, one actual complaint I have about the game, I like it very much, but one actual complaint I have... is that once you start getting into the later upgrades for the long rifle, the sniper rifle, it's just the only weapon you ever have to use. Because you can give it explosive rounds and no wobble on the sniper aiming and a zooming scope. And you can fire it from the hip and kill three enemies at once. You can take out a blood dragon with one magazine of ammo. It's like, it's totally ridiculous. So, I mean, that's one actual gripe that I have about the gameplay is the weapon balance is Terrible.
Wasn't that, well, I haven't played a lot of either Far Cry 3 or Blood Dragon, but isn't that the, like, in the point that you start out and you're still kind of a badass, but then towards the end of it, you're just owning people, like, yes, it's not hard anymore?
But in Far Cry 3, no one weapon ever becomes so much better than all your other weapons.
Gotcha.
In this case, the sniper rifle just becomes the best weapon in the game by a factor of 10.
Oh, I don't know. That weapon you get at the end is pretty awesome.
I may not have gotten there. Do you mean like the chain gun?
No, the blood dragon disc thing. I forget what they called it. The Kroll blade.
I don't have it yet. So.
Okay,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Play that game.
So I got Far Cry 3, and I see the greatness in it, but I don't find it fun. Huh. I just don't, and I know it's on. I know that's me, and it's not the game. I can feel that when I play. I'm like, this is tight. This is good mechanics, but I just haven't played it that much because I'm just not sucked in. But I got Blood Dragon just because it's Blood Dragon. And for some reason, it's the same mechanics, but that game is more fun to me. I don't know why.
I think, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Blood Dragon is just Far Cry 3 distilled. You know?
So glad they made that standalone. I think that was really really wise.
Mm-hmm. That's such a cool. $15, right?
Yep.
How long is it?
Oh, I got every single achievement in the game. It took me maybe 8 hours maximum.
Jeebos.
Do you remember when we used to pay $60 for a God of War that would last 6 hours?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome that it's $15 for that.
Well, I mean, you can finish the game in maybe, you know, hardcore 2 to 4 hours.
Wow.
But I did everything ever in that game. Like, there's, yeah.
Yeah, I like to capture all the bases. It's like, as soon as I get out into the open world, that's the first thing I do.
Yep.
I capture all the bases I can. But yeah, tremendous game. Anybody who might be listening to this should buy it and play it.
Nobody listens to this.
Nobody listens to this.
I listen to this after
everybody's
the fact,
dead.
I think it's just you and me, Griffin.
I stopped listening a long time ago.
My grandmother listens while she bathes.
It's just me, and I sit in the corner masturbating while crying.
Memories.
You guys have anything else you want to talk about for games before we get into some of the headier topics?
Headier? What's a headier topic?
Oh, just some of these other things we have written down here.
Okay.
Any Animal Crossing updates, Jeff?
Griffin went to my town and it was awesome.
Oh yeah.
And we traded some gear and Griffin tried to suicide in my bed.
I did.
And Griffin's town is named Cat City and Jessica's town is named Catopia, which is delightful. So they both can bond over their love of cats.
Yeah.
And I want to visit Griffin's town soon.
Prepare to be underwhelmed.
I don't even care what it looks like. I literally just want to go and play around in your town. I want to meet your animals.
Okay. Did you?
There's so much innuendo going on right now.
Come meet my animals.
I want to visit your town.
I'm
going to play with your animals.
Play with your nook.
Fuck no, Nook. No. I
did want to say real quick before we move on about, unless Griffin, did you want to say something about Animal Crossing?
I just want to say, so yeah, that Reggie bed thing, Jeff, that we'd both mentioned. So,
oh yeah.
I have Reggie as a friend, so I went and visited his house.
Yeah.
And I bought a bunch of crap out of his house, like all the display cases.
How did you visit his house?
I went to the thing in the middle where the dog is standing, and it's like, hey, this is where your street pass houses would go.
Oh,
the model home place.
So he spot passed you or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So then I went to his house and bought a bunch of crap there, and you can't buy his Reggie face bed.
No. In Animal Crossing, Jamie?
I've seen the Reggie face bed.
Okay, the Reggie face bed.
So I've also, this has put me on a dark path of just like custom making my own furniture, which I haven't got into yet, but like I feel like, you know, I'm going back home for my birthday this weekend and a wedding reception or something. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to get really deep into downloading QR codes onto my phone and then scanning in custom things into my world.
So you have the sewing machine from Sable?
I didn't know I needed one.
Yeah, you got to chat up Sable. Go to the Able Sisters and start chatting up Sable.
I've been just going there and spending tons of bells to try and get the other shop opened.
Oh, Kix? I got that
yeah.
open.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. Kix is awesome because the shopkeeper is like the most adorable fox thing, and it is so cute. It's not a fox. It's something else, but I whatever it is, it's adorable. You're going to love it.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, but so go to Abel's every day and talk to Sable at the sewing machine.
Okay, I thought that you just automatically could start making your own clothes in that shop.
You can make your own clothes, but in order to use QR codes, you need to unlock the sewing machine.
Oh, shoot. Okay, and then how do you make custom artworks? Do you know?
I think you can, like, request your design as an artwork or something, or, like, put it down.
Oh, thank God. I've seen some really good Kramer photos and Colonel Sanders things that need to go into my house.
One of my friends had a DuckTales flag, which I thought was awesome.
Nice.
So cool.
I think I need to buy this game. I've never played an Animal Crossing, and I have a 3DS.
You're going to play it tonight.
Do you have a lot of free time, Jamie?
Now I do.
Then you'll be fine.
until August I do. So yeah, I'm probably going to get it. Oh, man.
Play it on my 3DS tonight. It's perfect for download. I think, do you have it digitally or physical copy?
Yeah, no, I should have got it digitally because it is perfect for that. Just like jump over to this. Yeah. If I could play it on my phone, that's how I would prefer. You know, just like for five minutes at a time, pull it out, instant startup, and like, no, I just, it's monopolizing my 3DS at the moment and I can't get back to any Fire Emblem.
The thing that really strikes me about this game is that I don't know, maybe when the last one came out, I wasn't really paying attention to the video games news media, but this game comes out and like everyone whose opinion I usually rely on, but people who I don't associate with this type of game, like Jeff Gerstmann, like, oh my God, guys, you got to play this game. And it's like Jeff Gerstmann, like, and literally everyone on every podcast I listen to is like, oh yeah, you got to play this game. It's fantastic.
I don't know if that's what those people are saying. I think it's more like, I am playing this game a lot and I am an idiot. And I agree with that sentiment 100%.
I feel like with like Twitter becoming widespread and all these like micro blogging methods emerging, you hear about it a lot, and it kind of adds to the charm because people will like post pictures. Like you can take pictures in game and use the 3DS's browser to upload them.
Oh, cool!
Will just like upload pictures from Animal Crossing, and
it's
like
the share button.
Yeah, it'll be like, check out this adorable animal that went to my town, and it's awesome. I love it.
Or check out this filthy note I sent to this person, and now they're showing it to me because they read it every night.
There's finally that outlet for expression that was missing from the earlier games.
Which makes a good point in a way, because you guys were talking last week about how you wish there was just a little more and how Nintendo's always a little bit behind the curve, but you were wishing this one would just integrate the aspect of showing people what you've done a little better. But if you can do that, and you can,
but it's a lot of steps. Like I've never done that, and I never will, because that's a hell of a lot of hoops you're gonna have to jump through to actually get that going.
Yeah, well, it's not too bad, but it should be much more.
It's
intuitive.
A lot easier just to take a photo of your 3DS and then post it on Twitter.
It should be a share button, basically.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad it's getting out there. That sounds cool. I wanted to say real quick, Griffin, did you ever play Kingdom Rush?
No.
On iDevices?
I have not, no.
They talk about it on Giant Bomb.
I know.
I like it.
I've seen enough of it.
I think the first one was great. The second one is the exact same thing, but a little bit better. And I think they're great games. That's literally all I wanted to say. If you were thinking about getting the second one, I think it's like $2. I think it's $2 well spent. You'll have fun with it. If you want to try it, I highly recommend it. Especially if... Because those... I mean, you share opinions with those guys a lot, right?
Yeah, I do. Yep.
Yeah, so try it out. I like it.
Yeah, I might. I don't buy a lot of games for the iDevices, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The last really good one I played was The Box? The Question? The Box?
The adventure game where it's literally just a box?
Yeah.
Curiosity?
No.
I think it's called The Box or something.
It's not Curiosity, What's in the Box?
No.
Peter Molyneux?
I did play that, though.
Most times I play a game on my phone or my iPad, I want to kill myself. But this is the only game where I've thought, this is really fun. And this is the system for tower defense games. Like, But every time I try to play a platformer or an action game on my iPad, I just think, like, why did I buy this?
Yeah, no,
this is
don't
a useless piece of shit.
You should get... Knights of Pen and Paper, I think it's called.
That's a new game that just came out, correct?
Your statement to include an exception for Jetpack Joyride.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because yeah. I played the shit out of the game.
Yeah, that game's awesome. Man. I mean, Knights of Pen and Paper, it came out for PC just recently, but it originated on iDevices. It's also available on Android. Basically, it's like a traditional like a old school RPG type game, like you know, but it's very distilled, and the main hook is that you control people who are role playing as characters, and like there is the game world
that's cool
in which they are moving around, but then there's a higher level where you have like the pizza people who are role playing. So there's like a pizza guy who's role playing as like a soldier,
that's
and
awesome.
Like. You know, grandma who's role playing as someone else, and then like you can like buy items that enhance the entire game world, like a chalice to put on your game table that will add a buff to the whole game world, and like you can get like a special carpet for your game room that will do
so
another
cool.
thing. It's a really cool game. It's I mean, it's kind of a grind fest, and there are optional in-app purchases. I haven't had to use any. I kind of find that a little distasteful, but fortunately, yeah. I've never felt like the game demanded it yet, and it's a lot of fun. I've been enjoying it.
That's another thing about Kingdom Rush. I beat the first Kingdom Rush, which was a challenge, for me at least, without using any in-app purchases. That game's a dollar. That game's totally worth it. And in the second one, they give you a lot of the stuff that in the first one was in-app purchases for free, and it's almost like you're getting a treat. Because it's like, in the first one you had to pay to use heroes, and now you don't need to. So, it's fun.
Well, speaking of expenditures and chalices, I'd like to talk a little bit. I'd like to pick your guys' brains on Kickstarter and where you're at the moment on that. Double Fine Adventure Game kind of blew up the Kickstarter scene and, you know, went into this multi-million dollar budget for money donated to kind of getting games off the ground as these little side projects. Now we find ourselves at an interesting point where Double Fine is again posting a new Kickstarter program for Massive Chalice. You know, a different team within Double Fine is going to be doing this, headed up by Brad Muir instead of Tim Schafer. It will be a different kind of game, and I know you mentioned it last time, Jamie, and I've went and looked into it more, and it sounds freaking awesome, but do you think now that we've kind of come full circle with people asking for money twice without making any product, is this getting to this weird inflection point of Kickstarter where now, you know, this weird singularity where now we can't trust it anymore, like it's wrapping around on itself?
What do you mean by we can't trust it?
Like, there's some faith that you had for these projects to happen and come to fruition, and now, you know the one big one that everybody kind of looked to as being the defining title has now kind of gone into the sunset, but now hasn't made good on their promise, and now is starting and asking for more money for a different project.
I have a lot of opinion. I've thought about this so much. I'm going to try to say all my thoughts really quickly. So first thing is, so I gave money to the Double Fine Adventure. Mm-hmm. I've watched all the episodes. I'm really pissed off about their progress, and it pisses me off that they are way beyond their original deadline with way much more money than they thought they'd have. They even used some of the money that we gave them to hire a guy to get more money. And they have that in the episodes. I don't know if you've been watching, Griff. So I'm pissed off. The progress on that game is frustrating. They basically have like two levels, and they okay. So that's that one thing. And I still love them. I love Double Fine, but I haven't given money to Massive Chalice. There's 18 hours left, and I haven't given money. And I was like their biggest fan before, but I'm a little pissed off. Secondly, I'm wondering if this is a good venue for this kind of thing, because I should have known this is going to happen. This kind of stuff happens with games. I did give money to Zach Braff for his new movie because I love Zach Braff. He's already casted it.
Yeah, I didn't give him any money.
He's already casted it, and he's already started filming. He's going to be done in a couple weeks, and then he's going to cut it, and we're going to have a movie, and that's going to happen within a fraction of the time that it's taken Double Fine to make two freaking levels of an adventure game. Those are my thoughts.
Can I just soothe your craze, your rage here for a second?
Yeah.
This is my reasoning for not giving money to Massive Chalice, even though I like Brad Muir. I like what they're doing with the project. It sounds super ambitious. I listened to an hour-long interview with him just spitballing ideas on what they're going to do with it. And I'm like, you know, this sounds like the greatest strategy game ever created in the... Like, last week, you were like, where are we going to go from here? Well, this is where we're going to go. This genetics thing is incredible if they can bring that to fruition.
Yeah.
But this is where I tell myself to chill with Kickstarter, is that the project's been funded. You know, according to that contract, the game will come out. Now, the more money you give, the quote unquote better the product will be. But what Kickstarter started out as was a means to get projects moving that didn't necessarily have the funding to begin with.
Yeah.
Now, I think as we get further and further away from that, the more dangerous Kickstarter becomes as a tool, and more of a pre-order device.
You still got to pay for the game.
Well, but usually you don't.
No, you don't. You bet. You
pay up front, and
essentially,
then
essentially,
the money you donate is
you get the game if you donate enough. It's usually like I think
it's built on
Adventure.
Rewards.
I gave $25. I get the game.
Okay,
yeah. It's essentially like the ultimate hipster tool where you're like, oh yeah, well I liked it before everybody else did, so you know, I gave it $5.
Before it was cool. Before it was made.
Yeah, so I'm going to jump in real quick. When I went to PAX, pretty much every indie developer that was there was like, check out my Kickstarter. And it got a little tiresome, and you kind of start to feel like, this is the thing I have about Kickstarter. I will fund something if it is essentially like a finished product, or it's something where like the concept is like, I funded Shovel Knight most recently.
Yes.
Because I played the demo at PAX and I was like, this feels really tight. I like it. So I was like, I'll give these guys money. But if there is not like a finished product that just needs to be distributed, or not something that's really far along into production and they can show me a real like demo that's in good shape, I'm not touching it, because a lot of these things are just blown up. And like, look at like the Ouya. Look at how shitty the Ouya is. Like, nobody's going to buy that thing.
Ouya's not on shelves yet. So just, whoa, hold your horses.
It came out, dude.
Oh, is it the 29th or?
Yeah. They didn't, and I read
the
a couple.
Final reviews are terrible.
Yeah, they're terrible reviews. And
yeah, but is that anything shocking? Like,
well, no, but they
170 games at launch, more than any other console.
Most of them available on Android as well. The thing is, like that made $8 million, and like it's a piece of shit. And it's like the problem is, all you're doing is investing in potential, and people go into it. They're like, oh, it's just like a pre-order. I just pay and I get my game. But no, you're paying for something which doesn't exist. It's like pre-orders times 10.
Here's my take on this. The games business is really tough. And it's, for the most part, a totally speculative business. In other words, you spend however many years you're going to spend and however many millions of dollars you're planning to spend on people and time and the electricity to run your computers and your real estate and all that stuff. Basically upfront, hoping that when you finally, after the end of this arduous process, you bring your product to market, your sales are going to exceed your costs.
Yeah. And like Axel's right. Like, you don't even know when you make the game, like, especially with indies. And this is the problem, because there's so many indies on Kickstarter. Like, they're like, oh, this is going to take a year. And it takes like 3 years. And it's like,
Well, so this is just another way for games developers. It's another funding model for games developers other than purely speculative, which is what it's been up to this point, and which is why you've seen a lot of studios go under this, you know, the Microsoft, you know, game studios umbrellas and the big publisher umbrellas, is because it's a more stable source of funding. Of course, that comes with the, you know, you have to give up some creative control when you do that, because the publishers need to see return. So at the end of the day, I think it's actually a good thing that developers have it as an option to be able to get some funding up front. And some at the back end, as well as, you know, instead of just relying on some vague projections of whenever the hell they finish, they might make X dollars, and God, they hope to God they make a profit.
Yeah, I think Axel's right. It's like it's a tool, and it has its place, and I think it can be valuable. I think there is a big bubble right now, and I think that you are foolish if you invest in a product that is a storyboard.
I've invested in so many.
So I think this is fascinating, because I am on the complete other end of the spectrum, Jeff. as you. I think that if there is a product, if there is something that has been created, then why are you on Kickstarter? Like, you should be out there, you know, selling that thing. My subscription, or whenever I buy into Kickstarter projects, it's because it's like, we need this money to literally kickstart this. We cannot even begin this unless we can generate some interest. That's why I've put money into games like, you know, the Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden 2. There's nothing there to that except for some concept art and a vague engine when that game first was launched. But it's like, dude, this is not going to happen unless these people get $1,800 just to cover, you know, a month's rent.
So I have a question. If you invest in a project that's in an early stages and something happens, the company goes under, they run out of funds, the game doesn't come out, do you have any recourse, or are you just out that money?
I'm happy with being out that money, because this is, like I said, just using Charles Barkley again, like, I loved Shut Up and Jam Gaiden, and I want to see a second game, but I know that there's no way that's going to happen. So if I promise my, you know, $15 or whatever to that person, and then, you know, they use that and they can't make that project, it's like, well, so be it. I tried. Now I know not to trust them in the future.
Right.
I've donated $125 to Shadowrun Returns.
Okay. It's just micro investments. It's micro venture capitalism.
You don't get anything back.
It's risk.
Like,
it's
risk. But you get nothing in return. Like, you're not investing and then you get something out of it.
You get rewards, but...
But, it's not like your return is something that is comparable to your investment.
Yeah. Right. I understand. It's not a perfect analogy. But
it's essentially like being an alumni at a college. Like, you donate your money and you're like, there you go. Now you can send me a bumper sticker or something.
Well, the problem I have, I think that I don't think people understand the level of risk that they're taking on when they fund what is essentially a storyboard. And obviously, I've done that before. I mean, I did that with Double Fine, kind of against my better judgment in the long run. But
have you been watching the episodes?
Not really, but I've been following it a little bit. And I just think, like, there's a misrepresentation of the risks, because you look at it, it's like, okay, I give $40 and I get the game and a T-shirt. Great. But the game doesn't exist at all yet. And it's like, people view it as a pre-order when really it should be. It should be more obvious that there are significant risks to giving your money away, because Griffin, responsible about it.
If you are saying that people are viewing this as a pre-order, then yes, that's a problem. I don't know if that's what people are doing. I think this is like the, I want this, therefore I will put my money where my mouth is. Like, I feel like the more genuine, you know, sort of mentality is like, people want to see this thing come to fruition, so they put the money to make that happen. And if they get the game from it, that's great.
What do you guys think about so how can I put this? This is like a complicated idea. So when I invested in Double Fine Adventure, and Griffin, by the way, just so that I know where you stand, did you give money to Double Fine Adventure?
Yeah.
Have you been watching the episodes?
No.
Okay. I've watched every episode. I actually think the documentary has done extremely well. If anything, I think it's worth the money just for that, because it really is like an inside baseball kind of thing, if you like the kind of stuff. But anyway, so when I invested in Double Fine Adventure, I invested in Double Fine Adventure because they wanted to make something without the influence of publishers. And I thought that was a noble goal, so I gave them money. Now, watching the episodes, they have this huge idea which they can't even do with the $3 million that they have, and so they're not completely going against that ideal of doing it without influence from other people, but they are searching for revenue streams that may end up violating that ideal, which is like the core of the idea for me. So they're doing things. They're like selling early rights in certain areas, and they're getting money from corporations, but they're getting money from corporations who agree to have a minimal impact on the thing. So it's like the promise was broken. That was it. I paid for the promise.
Something interesting there is that you mentioned no input from publishers. That's what drew you to the project. Guess what? It's a total unfocused mess.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. Oh Oh my god. And it's an unfocused mess in the way that Tim Schafer in the first episode said it would be. It's like he knew that this is what it was going to be. So. Oh my god. And like every episode I'm like, all right, I'm going to play this episode and they're going to get their shit together. And every episode, the guys who are making it, I forget the name of that company, but they're amazing.
Player 2 Productions.
In the beginning of the episode, there's like a glimmer of hope. Like they hired someone new. They have some new art or something. And then at the end of the episode, it's just a clusterfuck and no one knows what's happening.
So it's like Cowboy Bebop. You know, at the end of each episode, they're still back at square one and lost and broke as fuck.
Oh my god, it's so heart-wrenching. And they have the best of intentions, but they're spending so much time on nothing. And I think it would be good if they had some business guy being like, hey, you know what? Let's move on.
I think part of the, it's just, hey, welcome to working in the West Coast.
Yeah.
They should hire me.
Axel would clean them up.
I'd beat the shit out of them.
Axel would transform Double Fine Adventure into a tightly controlled FPS.
In the meantime, they've had...
I would sell like hotcakes.
In the meantime, they've had Ron Gilbert leave the company.
I don't think that was related.
It wasn't related, but like that was also part of the promise. He was in that original video. It's like, oh my god, Ron Gilbert's going to be part of this, and he was consulting on things in the first few episodes.
I thought the promise was Ron Gilbert was not going to be involved in it, because that's what sold me.
No, in the first few episodes of the documentary, he's consulted on choices, and they do a playthrough with him, and he gives his advice.
Was he just like more fart jokes?
No, he gave actually really good advice. I could kind of see that the dialogue trees were a little, I mean, think about how unfocused the project is. Now imagine dialogue trees that are that unfocused. And he was the only one who was like, you got to clean these dialogue trees up.
Oh god.
So yeah, I don't know. I hope it's good. I don't know.
I'm all for Kickstarter.
Okay. All for it. I am too. I'm just, you know, as you said, it's become a business model, and that's what worries me about Kickstarter. Before it was more like the, hey, we're going to be a garage band that actually plays in our garage and maybe somebody will notice us. Now I feel like it's like this is another venue we have to perform at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it kind of, you know, it's like selling out a bit where it's like, you know, Kickstarter, man, that used to be all about for the people and the love. And now it's gone to the man.
Well, a really clever marketing team sold it that way.
Or just Double Fine.
It might have been the same marketing team as Tomb Raider.
I just mean not like the Kickstarter side of it. I'm just saying that like the things that were cropping up, like FTL was a game that was on
love that game.
Kickstarter. And yeah, as you should. It just, that was a success, an example of success. And I think there was, what, another one or two that happened, came out last year to fruition? Starforge, something like that?
Oh, Starforge,
Star Team? No, it's an iOS game.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's not the dumb Minecraft with guns.
It's like FTL, but...
Yeah.
But it's like people.
Yeah.
People on a ship, and there's aliens in your ship.
Sounds hot.
It's supposed to be good. I forget what it's called.
Yeah. I want it.
One of the three reasons to own an iOS device. I just don't know if it's good for video games. Like I said before, like you can make a film on Kickstarter and it can be there and you can make tangible progress. Like, oh, we hired a director. We're shooting here today. Look, we're shooting. We're doing it. And with a video game, it's so nebulous. And for people like, I mean, I'm a very impatient person. And this isn't to say that I won't continue to donate to Kickstarter. My faith has been shaken, though.
Yeah. I mean, I've kickstarted a project that it will remain nameless, and it was a local thing, and I kickstarted it, gave him money, and it, as far as I can tell, it was successful, but I didn't get any of my crap, and I actually don't know if it's really successful, because I haven't seen the finished product. Neither do I care, though. Like, I knew the person involved with it, and I was like, hey, you're asking for a small amount of money to make this dream of yours come true. Like, I am the biggest Scrooge ever to not give it to you.
That's true. The other thing that worked was I gave Amanda Palmer money, and I love that album. Like, that Amanda Palmer is like a 90s rock star, and she wanted to make an album. And so I gave her money, and she made an amazing album, like a critically acclaimed commercial success outside of Kickstarter that started from Kickstarter. I just want to see that one game. We have the album. Hopefully Zach Braff's movie won't suck balls. I want to see that one game, and then my faith will be completely restored, and I'll be throwing money at people.
July Shadowrun Returns comes out, and I think that is going to be the make or break for me, is like, how good is this game? You know, does it seem like it's actually what was promised on you know, the original intent? Like, was it did their promise come to fruition? You know, if that doesn't happen, then I will probably not fund anything else on Kickstarter.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think Kickstarter is awesome still. I just am quite jaded in how I approach any project. I'm very skeptical about it, and I think it served me well. But I love certain Kickstarter things that I funded, so
yeah,
I'm happy about it.
Well, speaking about regretting decisions, Jamie, are you getting nervous about your PS4 pre-order?
Well, I haven't pre-ordered it yet, but okay, so I'm going to pre-order a PlayStation 4. Okay.
What, you're going to?
I'm going to.
This is like two steps removed.
No, I'm going to. The only reason I'm going to pre-order a PlayStation 4 is because I won an iPad at a medical conference, and I'm going to sell the iPad and pre-order a PlayStation 4 when the iPad arrives
at my house. You should pre-order it now on the podcast because peer pressure.
No, but I did get scared because I would probably order a PlayStation 4 anyway. I love PlayStation. But I got really scared when Microsoft reversed its policies, and then all of a sudden Xbox One is the number one selling electronic device as a pre-order on Amazon. And I was like, holy shit. I mean, I love PlayStation, but like, I want to have the one that people make games for. And it made me a little scared. I know it's irrational. I know it's crazy. But I was like, oh my God, am I getting the wrong one? Should I shell out another 100 for the Xbox? Is Xbox better? Oh my God, I don't know. I can only have one.
Here's what you do. You buy both.
No. I just said, I can't win another iPad. The odds
yes,
of that, the odds of that happening
yes,
are astronomical.
Yes, we can.
Oh my God.
I think that the reason, it could be that it was number one for a while, but I think that all the various SKUs or SKUs or whatever the hell they call them, SKUs of PlayStation 4 together, we're still outselling Xbox, but I could be wrong.
It just scared me. Why are people so short-sighted? Don't people know that they're still evil?
I mean, why
bias emerging.
Is that not a good thing, though, for both sides to have equal, you know, to be more or less the same? So, you know, there is that sort of competition on the marketplace?
Competition is good. Competition is what led to Xbox nixing those policies, I don't know. I don't have as much of a bias as you think. Xbox 360 was my first next-gen console.
That's right, it was.
I bought that relatively early.
You got Oblivion.
And I got Oblivion, and the second day I owned it, I turned the console from horizontal to vertical while playing Oblivion, and I lost the game. Oh, man. But, I don't know. I just want people to like PlayStation again. Yeah. I want the bros at my med school to talk about PlayStation.
Mostly because here's the reason why we were passionate about it, probably. Because there have been more games on Sony's platform that I have thought spoke to my tastes than on Microsoft's. Also, they are good at recruiting people into their army of unpaid marketers who are us.
I think that the Xbox, actually, the more I think about it, the Xbox lineup is probably more appealing to me, just because of, you know, a handful of titles there and PlayStation 4 not really having a lot of exclusive that have been announced that seem really awesome. But anyway, I just want to say that son of a bitch, what was I gonna say? I think that, you know, something that's really, it's just nice to see the underdog coming up again, where you're like, Sony is making smart moves, they're saying good things, they sound like they have our interests at heart, like, and they're on the rise, and it's finally they're making the right decisions and doing good. It's like, it's, I understand, Jamie, where you're like, yeah, I just want to see them liked again. Like, yeah, I totally get that.
They've captured my heart. They're making a more powerful system for less money, and I want it to do well. And you're completely right, Griffin. At first I was totally not down with Titanfall. the more I look at Titanfall, the more I think I could have fun with this. And I think Xbox does have the more compelling launch lineup, but I'm not going to get an Xbox. And also, Titanfall for PC, right? I'll play it on PC.
Yeah, and Xbox 360.
Oh, really?
Serious?
Yeah. Okay, not by Respawn, though. It's outsourced.
Oh. Okay. But there's also, I mean, Rise. I saw some stuff about Rise. That's okay. Maybe I'd like Rise. I don't know. Yeah, it's more exciting to me than Killzone. I have no desire to play Killzone.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of the stuff they announced, the exclusives for launch, aren't really catching my eye for PS4.
But I will play. I'm actually looking forward to Knack. I saw Jimmy Fallon play Knack. Looked fun.
Huh.
What else? Watch Dogs I can play on anything. But I'll play it on PS4 to make myself feel better. I bought something that I can use for something. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some indies. I have PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, indies is where it's at.
Is The Witness coming out first on PlayStation?
That is probably the one saving grace that has at the moment. Because, I mean, a lot of these games are going to be coming out for PC as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like consoles, and I want the console that has the indies. And for me, I don't really play a lot of AAA games, honestly. Like, this year I've played Bioshock Infinite, and I've played Last of Us.
Wow.
And Bioshock Infinite was, well, I was looking forward to it, but it was even that was a little bit under duress. Like, I was like, I should play this. So, like, I'm really excited about the indie support, and it's kind of stupid to buy a $400 box with a nice GPU in it just to play, you know, low resource indie games that I could get on the computer, but fuck it, I like controllers.
Yeah.
And sitting at a TV, and I just want to support indies.
I know exactly how you feel.
I like the platform.
And I'll say, if you have a significant other, even if it's a single player game, if you play it on a TV, they can watch, and there's something about that. Like, if it's different than sitting at your computer by yourself. I don't know. Like, I played Braid with Shannon just watching, and we had so much fun.
For those of us who are forever alone, the PC works just fine.
Yeah. Also, there's laptops, and those work fine, too.
That's very true. But if it's, like, on your couch, and it's in the middle of your living space, and, like, Shannon will be doing something else, she'll just see me. I don't know.
I don't like to, like, play a game. Yeah, like, I feel Jamie's pain. I've got my girlfriend. She doesn't really like to watch and play games. She'd prefer to be a participant or just not be involved at all. But she hates when I am not, like, able to be communicated with. So, like, if I throw on, and, like, audio is really important to me. So, like, if I throw on the noise isolating headphones or whatever, and I'm playing a PC game, then she's going to be, like, getting pissed at me. But if I play, like, a game on my TV and just do audio through the speakers, she'll be like, yeah, sure, I'll hang out with you while you do that.
Mm-hmm.
You so need that to, like, Ferris Bueller up some contraption of some weird voice recording that recognizes certain key phrases and spits them back out at her. It's like, I hook up one of those microphones that beams people's words back to them at, like, a half-second clip, so they get terrified and just be quiet.
Yeah, I mean, I play a lot of PC games, too. Like, I played a ton of Binding of Isaac on PC, like 300 hours. Whoa. But
probably more. Literally every time I log on to Steam, Jeff is playing the Binding of Isaac.
Do you know how many hours, for real?
Over 300.
Do you know the exact number?
No.
Damn it.
I can look, though. I have my laptop with me. I am so excited for Rebirth, by the way, if any of you know about that. That's coming to consoles. It's so perfect.
I'll play that on the PlayStation.
Yeah. So anyway, so I just like sitting at a TV, and I am a bit of a Sony fanboy. I want the Eastern Connection. I like their exclusives in the past. Their current exclusives are not so hot for me. They look okay. But I don't care about the exclusives on either side that much.
Well, I mean,
in the third party.
They're making a good case for it now, though. I mean, The Last of Us being, you know, Naughty Dog being quite, you know, easily the best studio of this generation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I feel like I'm kind of like sitting on top of the castle looking down at all the peasants.
Master Race.
Yeah, I'm a PC gamer. But I tell you, the reason that I have a console at all is because I love driving simulators. I love them so, so much.
Are you going to buy an Xbox One?
I'm going to buy an Xbox One because of, I know a new Forza game will be coming.
Oh, dude, it's already been announced. Yeah. Forza 5.
Is it launch or no?
I believe it is launch, yes.
Is it launch? Okay. So I didn't know that it had been announced, but I knew it was coming.
How many years have you been waiting for somebody to say the word Drivatar, Axel?
The first time I heard it, which was just now, it was the best day of my life.
Dude, okay, so Xbox One has this thing. It's called the cloud. And as I understand it, the cloud will make everything in the world better.
Well, that settles that then. I'm going to buy two.
Start digging into some articles on what the cloud is actually. If you follow Major Nelson, he's been linking to a lot of developers, blog posts explaining what the cloud is to them, and it is incredibly illuminating. And it's a shame that Microsoft is unable to articulate what the cloud is besides this like nebulous superpower. Instead, they're kind of leaving it up to these teams to make it clear, but there is some interesting things out there, and it does sound cool.
Is it going to make your graphics better?
Potentially.
What is it going to do?
Potentially. I mean, maybe not graphics, but more of like matchmaking, dedicated servers, some of the background things that go on that's kind of like maybe not system intensive, but you can remove some of that burden from your system, freeing up more space to do other things.
I mean, that's good. I'm happy about that. I'm guessing the reason they didn't say that is because that's not very sexy.
No, yeah. Infinite power of the cloud sounds a whole hell of a lot better than, like, you know, it's like what we already have.
Or, yeah, better.
No, I mean, look, especially if you're playing the kind of games that I like to play, mm-hmm. which is the other reason that I'm going with the Xbox and not the PlayStation. I have no interest in Japanese games whatsoever. I do have interest in competitive games, and Microsoft
Xbox is for you.
Has me covered there. Latency is a big deal. Especially if you're, you know, if the next Halo game, you know, has as strong a multiplayer component.
The next Halo game is a television show.
Isn't it already
Spielberg.
Out?
Steven Spielberg is going to talk about it sometimes.
It's Steven Spielberg talking about Halo.
It's just
going
to be Halo Boom Blocks.
Yes,
which
be
would be
I've
the best game Halo ever.
Blocks. Griffin and I talked about how Griffin wants there to be Halo, like Halo Tennis.
I want Master Chief to be exported to every genre, much like Mario. Dr. Master Chief.
Since we're on the subject of next gen, I don't want to cut off things prematurely, but I was hoping we could talk a little bit about what it's going to be like when the next gen starts, because EA recently said that for the first 18 to 24 months of the next gen, they are going to be investing in cross-generational titles.
Sure.
And I was, I'm not surprised by it. I've heard a lot of rumbling, I guess, on Gaff, pretty much, about how this generation, especially, there's going to be a ton of cross-generational content. So you're going to see, like, look at, like, Watch Dogs, a lot of the Ubisoft stuff, for example, is coming to both the PS3 360 and PS4 Xbox One. And you've got, you know, what else have you got that's doing that? A lot of the major sports titles. I mean, you know, you still have, you know, FIFA 14 is coming to PS2, so that's no big deal. But it's interesting to see just how much, like MGS5 is coming to current gen consoles. So I'm wondering how that will affect sales of next gen consoles. Are they going to have a slow start?
I see what you're asking. Yes.
Yeah. Is there going to be any incentive for new buyers? Like, I wonder, like, first of all, like, what does this say about the cost of AAA if it's just not possible to put them on the new platforms right now on their own? And also, like, what does it mean for launch? Like, who's going to buy these things except for hardcore enthusiasts?
I think that's it, though.
Gets back to the point we were talking about when we were talking about Kickstarters. It takes a long damn time to make a good game.
Yeah.
And when you have, you know, a next gen console rolling out right in the middle of your development cycle, what you're going to do is you're going to go into your rendering software and you're going to crank up a few settings and release it for the next gen stuff.
Well, yeah, these people
to some extent. But a lot of these teams are developing first for next gen and then kind of putting it down for the second. And then other teams are covering the other system ports.
The sense I got, because these guys have known about this stuff at least in one way or another for a while.
Right.
I mean, you know, Square
the
Enix
minimum of a year.
Square Enix decided to target next gen like 3 years ago or whenever they held, you know, halfway through versus
fuck, whatever, man. No.
Yeah. So,
Square Enix has no goddamn clue what's going on.
Well, the point is people have known roughly where the next gen was going to be for a while. The sense I get is that these people are saying, look, we need to sell, you know, 5 million copies or more to make any kind of profit on these games now. So there's just no way we can only do next gen, or we're not going to make any money.
Yeah.
And that worries me immensely.
That's the flawed thinking of the market that we're in right now, where 5 million copies of a game is your break-even point. That means your budget is too big. Like, that is a hole that these companies have dug themselves into. It is, you know, how is that the consumer's problem? If $60 for a game is not enough to cover that expense, like, they need to make cutbacks. That is an unreasonable expectation to have that. And then also, when the user base is at its fattest and most robust, and you can't turn a profit that at this late game in the console's life cycle, like, these companies need to rethink their marketing strategy, their game design, all of this stuff.
But then that raises the issue, like, what the hell are we doing, you know, going next gen right now? If costs right now are such that you can sell 3 million copies of Tomb Raider and it's a failure.
That's because, like, Square Enix is a bunch of dumbasses.
Like, well, okay, that's fine. But, like, as gamers, we're getting pumped about next gen. We're like, oh, let's get PS4s. Let's get Xboxes. But, like, if we're asking for higher development costs. And I feel like we're just headed for maybe not a hard crash, but I wonder if sales are just going to drop off again. Like, if year over year sales are going to be lower next year.
Well, fine, then so be it. Then eventually, like, the market will adjust itself. You know, the AAAs will die off, like the mediocre, you know, like the A-minus B tier. I don't know, whatever you call it. Not really B, but, you know, that like the THQ level games, like, they will go away at some point. Those ancient dinosaur companies like the Call of Duties and the Maddens that just become too big for their own budget will fall on top of themselves, and the indie titles, like the small teams, the $30 games will move up and get more expensive, and the teams will get bigger, and then, you know, it's just the cycle repeats itself.
I'm going to make a prediction, and we can talk about this in 5 years, and I really am not basing this off anything, but I'm just going to go ahead and say that I don't think that next gen will have any problem selling. I think the next gen consoles will do fine.
I agree.
And I think that 3 years from now we'll be having great games in the new generation, and I don't think we'll see any falling off of quality in games. And I think it's because it's not an industry-wide thing. It's like a company thing. Like, Square, like, that's a massive fuck up to sell 3.4 million copies of a critically acclaimed game and have it be such a failure that you completely reshuffle your corporate structure. People are going to be looking to figure out why that happened.
Yeah.
And hopefully it won't happen again. And that's been happening more and more. And I feel like they're learning their people are conscious of these things. Companies are conscious of these things. People are rejiggering engines so they can get games out the door faster.
Yeah.
I think
just what you were saying right now sparked a thought in my head too. And that's going back to the Ouya and going back to just what you said there, you know, people, I think, want more, they want better. And the way with, like, you know, the iPads and iPods and this sort of, like, technology cycle that people are in right now, it's like, yeah, you get a new device every year and it has all your old stuff and it does new cool stuff. Like, gamers are getting impatienter because, you know, everybody is getting impatienter.
Well, this is also been the longest generation.
Yeah. But it's like, we want our new stuff. We want it to do new stuff. We want to see cool new stuff. So your sales are going to start tapering off because people, you know, are going to things like the Ouya or going to things like, you know, the iPad to get their gaming needs because the big boys out there aren't providing.
I don't know. I remain worried that sales are not going to reach anywhere like they're supposed to be. I mean, I am a little encouraged that I've read a couple of companies, I forgot which one. It looks like they're taking slightly leaner approaches. I like that EA is using Frostbite for 15 games. That's really wise of them.
Great ending, too.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that.
Konami made an engine.
People are taking steps that are going to help. But I do worry, though. I understand that, you know, this might be a shot in the arm, but I do. Hello? I'm not sure that it's going to be, I mean, obviously, you know, what is it, if it happens, then we just lose, we lose AAA games and things change, and right. I'll probably get more games I like if we're going to get more indies, but I just worried about the short-term effects, I guess, on gaming.
Oh, I think it's super cool. Like, what happens if we hit the apocalypse? Like, what happens if we do, and everything, all systems die, and all that's left is the PC? I think that's super fascinating, because we just start rebuilding, and then it's like, hey, people, Axel, you're right on top of that game. You got your bug out bag and your bunker, like your panic room, all that shit's ready to go for you. But
natural gas generator hooked up to my gaming room.
I just think that there will never be a point when there's no more consoles. Like, there will always, Nintendo will always exist making something. Maybe not a console, but they will always have their Nintendo thing. Like, maybe a handheld only, or a phone or something. But, like, even worst case scenario, there will be somebody left to service that need.
I'm totally not worried about this. I think the living room is still a place where people go to get together. Case in point, televisions are not getting any less popular, and they're just getting better and better and better. And, you know, 4K is coming soon, and it's already here, actually.
I don't know,
But the living room will always be sort of the place to be in a house. And I think there's always going to be some kind of box that you connect to your display, even though smart TVs are a thing, that are going to sell, that are going to be there. And I just don't see these new consoles having any issues at all in terms of sales. The only thing I will say, though, is that I think when this current gen that's going out was first being hyped up, everybody was waiting on lines that you had to have a PS3. You had to have the new Xbox. People who were like, didn't expect to be into video games were like waiting overnight in lines, queuing for the Xbox, you know, and I don't get the sense of excitement from normal people for the new consoles. You know, the guys who just play Madden don't have to have the Xbox One.
I think we're gonna see a contraction, and I think we're headed for rocky times personally. But look, I mean, we're gonna know in like a year what the initial story is.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to reconvene then and see what happened.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating. The average Joe this go around may have a little bit more trouble defining, because I mean, every, like, if you look at last gen, it's like, well, PlayStation, you had features, you had big bullet points, like PlayStation 3, well, okay, it's a Blu-ray player, expensive, but it plays all my old favorite games, the new awesome games that are coming out, and it plays Blu-rays, and it's a media center. And, you know, the Xbox 360, you know, it's like, it's got this online crap to it. It has these crazy games. It's like the gamer's box. It's like pushing the medium forward. But, like, I kind of am nervous about this generation for what are the big selling points that are going to appeal to, you know, Joe Walmart. Like,
I don't know.
But
seriously, I mean, I know that I'm kind of caricaturized for saying this, but seriously, graphics.
Really? But also I think what you said, Griffin, is super important. My uncle had an iPad 3, he bought an iPad 4.
Yeah.
They're the same fucking thing. And it's like, people, I do want something. I'm a consumer whore. I want a new controller.
Yeah.
I want a
Dude, I bought a new 3DS XL because it had a Pikachu on it.
So I think there are a lot of people I don't know, like. And then you think to yourself, like, I'll buy the console and then I'll buy the, you know, the games and the fun will come after. But I need the console. I don't know. We'll see. I could also see it failing miserably.
I don't know. It's like average people. I'm not sure it's going to speak to them anymore. We'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
To make yourself, to give you some night terrors here, some fuel to the fire, Jamie, I think that now with both consoles kind of being on the same, you know, like, neutral territory towards the consumer, I think that now the Xbox One has a more punchy, you know, appealing to the masses bullet point lists of neato features.
Uh-huh.
Where you're like, it's true. You know, it's got Kinect, and it comes with it this time, and it works.
Yeah.
And you can use your TV with it, and you can... you know, record games and share them, and it has the Xbox Live, and you can use old games, and you know, it's like there are those like stupid tech features that I can tell my stepdad about, and he'd be like, well, that's interesting. But it's like, what do you tell people non-gamers about the PS4? You're like, well, it plays games, the new ones.
It's so true. The same uncle, the guy who bought the iPad 4 after having the iPad 3, he has an Xbox and Kinect. And when he was talking to me about it, he was like, yeah, you know the game where, you know, you're in the canoe and you got to, like, paddle because you're in the canoe?
Kinect
and
I'm Adventures?
Like, I guess it's Kinect Adventures. And then I told him there's a new Xbox coming out, and he was like, oh, man. And he loves sports games. He's going to buy it. It's going to do well. And you know what? I'm excited about the Xbox. I'll buy it when it's $400. I'll buy it when it's $300. Sure.
I'll buy it when I can get better internet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I will probably not buy it. unless Sony crashes and burns, in which case I'll probably buy it.
Distinct possibility.
Yeah, distinct possibility, but yeah. I'm keeping the faith. Keeping the faith.
I think the next generation is going to be the exact same as this one, and there's going to be a ton of games that are on both, and then the shooters will be on the one, and the story driven, and Naughty Dog games will be on the PlayStation.
Glad I'm buying a PlayStation.
Yeah, exactly. They're both selling well, right? Like there was a quote from Amazon about.
I would not put any stock in any of those things. I mean,
even from Amazon.
No, I would not. Amazon.
What did it say?
The one thing Amazon said was that when the Xbox One was at the height of its pre-order dominance, it was selling 2,500 units a minute. Which is insane.
Wow.
But they didn't say anything about the PlayStation 4, but they did say in the same press release that the PlayStation 4... So the Xbox One Day One bundle was number one, and then the PlayStation 4 had different stations, like, on the list too, just not number one. Like, the Killzone bundle was number four, and the Watch Dogs bundle was number eight, and whatever, so...
Yeah, but you know what also was on that list? Like, controllers and points cards. So, yeah. I mean, I don't put any stock into that stuff because it's robots that are doing a lot of those purchasing. Like,
you can't trust robots.
That's true. You can't trust them.
They're drones. It's the drones.
Have you seen iRobot?
Have you seen science fiction? You can't trust them.
iRobot is the greatest movie of all time.
But, right, how could it be any different? It's going to be the same. It's going to be the same stuff.
I think you're right for the most part.
We will see. I'm worried about this cross-gen thing.
Oh, but I mean, we've been through this before. I mean, it's happened already.
Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to Nintendo? What's going to happen to
that? I think is a far more interesting question.
I think it's going to be lukewarm. Yeah, they'll be all right.
They're just a well-run company.
Nintendo,
not these past few years. But they've made profit for like 30 consecutive years. No, how long have they been making profit for? It might have been that last year was the first loss they ever posted, annual loss, like, in the history of the company.
Wow.
They do a good job at handling their money. They did a bad job at, like, handling everything else over these past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo's business strategy is genius. I mean, they just refuse to participate in the same battle that Microsoft and Sony are having. They're not going to let the competition affect them. They're going to create their own market, and they're going to, you know, make a product that where if you want to play the quirkier games, if you want Mario, you got to buy their thing.
That's true.
Blue Ocean, bitches.
Yep.
Blue Ocean up in the house.
Kid Icarus.
No, I mean, but Blue Ocean's a strategy.
It is problematic, though, because if you continue to just define yourself by only yourself and put yourself into this own, like, isolated area, there will eventually be a time when kids say, who is Mario? Oh, that's my grandpa's game. Like, you can't have that. You can only prey on nostalgia for so long until that nostalgia wears thin and those people die.
I don't know, dude. Angry Birds is like a huge hit, but it doesn't even, like, it hasn't made anything. Like, it hasn't made anything compared to Mario.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in the Nintendo store in New York, Griffin?
No.
Being in the Nintendo store in New York is like what I imagine it would be like to work at Nintendo. Because when you're in the Nintendo store in New York, the only thought that goes through your mind is, everything Nintendo has ever done is brilliant.
Except the Nintendo consoles are actually made in the Foxconn factory in China, which make you want to kill yourself.
It's like being in a wonderland and everyone is happy and nothing is wrong.
Can we go there tomorrow?
Yeah, we can. And and if you want a wallet that has the Nintendo original NES controller on it, you can have it. And it's a beautiful life to live.
So is this just like a better lit Hot Topic is what you're saying? Like, what do you mean?
It's amazing. It's really cool.
If I go there, Griffin, I will buy you a Rossetti doll and send it to you.
Oh, that sounds great.
They have a lot of new Pokemon stuff in there.
Fuck yes.
It's like the first floor is basically children foaming at the mouth and like running around, and there's Pokemon everywhere. And then the second floor, there's like a little museum, and that's where like all the people over the age of 13 are. And there's like, it's just a beautiful place. But
on the top floor, is there Pokemon real dolls?
You can get your Lopunny action up there. Your hot Skideon Wailord action. Oh, do you know that reference, Griffin?
I have no idea. I thought you just had a stroke.
The different Pokemon can breed with each other. You guys know about that, right? Like, you can breed two different species. Anyway. So the most hilarious pairing of all is Skitty and Wailord, and they can produce offspring. So there's pictures on the internet of hot Skideon Wailord action. Because Skitty is like this little cat. And Wailord is a giant whale.
What so happened? That's
you can't see me right action. Now, but I'm making the mind exploding.
I'll show you guys after the show.
Man, I hope really this pumped. Changes in X and Y.
I'm really pumped for X and Y.
X and Y is exciting. Not Griffin. Jamie does not understand the fairy type.
No, I don't, because there's already fairies. Clefairy!
But the types matter, man.
But it's there's already fairy. Why can't there be like a pedophile type?
Jamie.
Professor Oak.
That's yeah. You are the pedophile type.
Damn it. No, I mean like I just mean like they could have had a cooler type. I'm all.
I think fairy is fucking awesome, and I think you're crazy.
No. I'm all for new types. I'm excited, but it could have been like. Dragon ghost type.
No, that's I want fairy type. I like that it's like kind of weird and
it is
bizarre.
That is true. If it was dragon ghost type, that would be like a Skylanders Western thing.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I think it's just fascinating. Like it's the most benign wrench they can throw into the system. So sure, if that's what's that's what I get for change in Pokemon, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna change the metagame, guys.
Which do you play the metagame?
I did a little bit. I did like a couple days.
I don't play any game which anyone uses spreadsheets to play. And if I'll play it, but not like as well as those people do.
the thing about that metagame is. You can have a lot of your work done for you, and the only decision you make is what moves the different guys have, basically.
But you can open up a bunch of spreadsheets and have three of them in a row.
I feel like after a point, playing Pokemon competitively is essentially like blackjack counting cards, where I'm like, I understand the concept, but I will never be smart enough nor have enough time to do this.
Exactly.
I think it's awesome. I am very interested in it. I haven't done it for a long time, but I think it's really cool.
Like, if anything, I'd be more interested in like the twink Pokemon scene of like. You know?
And by twink, he means young.
I mean exactly what I said.
Is like Machoke a twink Pokemon?
Oh my god!
I would like a rawr more. Amateur Pokemon battle.
A homemade.
Yeah. You know.
Pokemon
like some Gonzo well. Pokemon.
Instead of Pokemon X and Y, Pokemon
XXX?
Stonewall and the Mission. I don't know.
What, you just name it Tortilla Chips? What?
Oh my god.
Okay. So, let's see, what other topics do we have here? I guess that's really it. We covered cross-gen, indies. Oh, no. Any interest in talking about self-publishing? How that? Did we hear about what happened with that from the build thing?
I don't think it's been announced yet. There was rumblings that it might be. Did you hear anything, Griffin? I haven't checked the news.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I had heard that Microsoft may announce self-publishing, and I realized we talked about it last week too.
Yeah,
but it could change things a little. I'm not sure.
I mean, doesn't this self-publishing through consoles really mean publishing through Microsoft and or Sony?
No, I think that's the reason why they're talking about it, but I don't know.
Well, it's just, yeah, Microsoft and Sony get a cut, but you don't have to work with them. You can just buy like a thing and you can just upload your game.
But right. They have to approve your game?
I think that's the difference, because Jonathan Blow is talking about this self-publishing thing a little bit, and he was saying about how in XBLA, when he made Braid for XBLA, he needed, like, there were so many specific stupid guidelines, like you have to prompt the player to press a button within the first 15 seconds of the game.
The old
you
Braid, have to, the old, or sorry, the Bastion problem.
It's like,
well, also publishing means is you don't have to work with a publisher. That's all.
Yeah.
Yes. So maybe less control over.
Yeah. You have more creative control.
So yeah, what would happen to you if they said that?
I don't think it'd make that much of a difference. I mean, I think the indies are going to be skeptical about Microsoft for a while, so it's going to take them a little while to come around. I'd be okay with it. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to have conniptions.
if they said, we're not doing DRM, we're allowing indies to self-publish,
and that it's $400.
And it's $400. Would you consider?
I'd consider it. Yeah. I mean, I'm not so much of a blind fanboy that I would just never touch it, but I just like Sony's ethos better. I like their I guess their mission statement, or what they've shown themselves to be over the past, let's say, 2 years or so.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
Right. Are you guys worried that we're gonna have to wait until the last 2 years of the next gen's console life to get games like The Last of Us again? It seems like at the end of the console, like we got a Colossus and Ico towards the end of PS2, right?
Last Guardian, guys, it's still coming to PS3.
Yeah, never forget, man. Last Guardian.
Never forget. Jack Tretton said it's on hiatus, that motherfucker.
Yeah, but then he went back on the record and was like, "I don't listen to me on that." It's still being worked on or something.
His Japanese overlords were like, "You gave them information about the last party, you asshole."
Yeah, Ken Kutaragi just like materializes and slaps him in the face.
A pound of flesh from him.
I'm not worried about it. I mean, I'm super excited. I think the beginning of the console cycle is the most exciting time in the console cycle itself, because it's like, this is when all the weird shit starts happening, and you're like, you know, this is where you get to see the potential, and this is like the brave new frontier.
Yeah. It's true. When you think about the beginning of the 360, it's like it's nothing like where it ended up.
No.
Yeah. Like, remember Perfect Dark Zero? I remember playing in my dorm room in college and being like, "Whoa, there's textures that reflect." This is insane.
Yeah, a lot of
high at the
time. I was high.
A lot of developers and publishers say that beginning of a generation is when you take your chances on new IP. So we'll see what comes out.
Mirror's Ledge.
Mirror.
Oh yeah.
I want that, but I'm afraid. I'm very afraid, but I want that. I love Mirror's Edge.
I loved it too.
Mirror's Edge 2 looks, or whatever it's called, the Mirror's Edge sequel. Is it Mirror's Edge 2?
Scrap that shit and focus on Battlefield 5.
It's a prequel, actually. Prequel sequel.
Right, but what's the name? Is it Mirror's Edge 2, or is it that next Mirror's Edge, or, you know, the Mirror's Edge game?
the new Edge. Apple Mirror's Edge.
Dumpling Lady 3. I don't know.
Wait, what?
I don't know. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So nobody's going and reversing their decision now. Nobody's been, you know, dissuaded from their current position, saying, "Okay, well, now I guess I'll switch to the Xbox One."
No, I'm gonna get an Xbox One eventually. $500 is expensive, and
yeah,
I like PlayStation.
I'm not gonna get
both.
I'm just gonna get one, I think. Like one or the other, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And probably PS4, almost certainly.
This generation is well, you know, I wouldn't be smart to take lessons I've learned from this generation into the next without knowing that, you know, these patterns will hold. But I've learned that the best games I've wanted on the Xbox 360 come to PC. Mm-hmm. Iron Brigade, Fez, like, if
Are you ready for Fez 2, Jamie?
I am so ready. Oh my God.
Have they shown anything yet?
And no. They showed a thing that said Fez 2.
Yeah. It said
and
Fez fucking 2. Yeah.
Yep. And it looked old.
Yes.
Apparently it's going to be like Zelda 2 was to Zelda 1, which is a huge shift.
I don't know. I have not heard anything from Phil Fish.
Phil Fish said that.
It's going to come out 50 years from now.
Probably. But no, he said it would be that kind of a change. It would be a significant change.
Okay.
I was going to say the one thing I may do between now and the launch of next gen consoles is cancel my pre-order. I might do that.
Why?
Because if once there is enough compelling content for me to upgrade, I can just buy it.
I think that's a very level-headed approach to it.
But what happened to
the gung-ho? I've had a couple of weeks to think about it. Look, I'm not necessarily going to do it, but I'm just nervous about the next gen. And I have a Vita, which I like. I have a Wii U, which I like. But they are not doing so well right now, and they make me nervous. And I want to have something that's going to have games and going to have support.
Mm-hmm. And what you get for buying Japanese crap.
I waited to buy a PS3 for like 3 years. So maybe I'll do that with the PS4. I'll probably just get my pre-order and marvel at the hardware and not having anything to play for like a year.
I'm going to get PS4. I'm just going to look at the controller.
I'll just I'll take the PS4 and just turn the thing around.
Yeah, just spin it around. I'll be like, Shannon, look, the buttons are slightly different. Look at that.
I'll mess with the controller. I'll play with the box and put in a disc and stuff.
Has there been any word on how how the buttons work on them? Like, just from pictures, I haven't seen a button on the PS4 that like looks like the power on or disc eject or something like that.
Oh, you mean on the consoles themselves?
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't heard anything.
All I know is that the USB 3.0 ports are in like the, for the PS3, they're like in crevice between
As is the disc slot. It's in, really? It's in the negative space. Yeah, yeah.
That's $400 right there. It's curved. It's a curvy slab.
You mean it's angled?
It's angled.
Yeah, it's sexily trapezoidal.
Yes, exactly.
It's a parallelogram, bitches.
You can play Blu-rays. You can play all my Blu-rays.
Finally.
Finally.
Yeah, but so can the Xbox One. I feel like this is the most underrated discussion that's happened. Like, maybe it's just people know something I don't in like the real games industry about Blu-ray and how all that stuff works, but like, Xbox has a Blu-ray. Is that not weird?
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, I guess they paid Sony for it.
Maybe that's why it's $500.
You know what's really weird? Sony is looking to sell off their entertainment division, but they were hyping up how awesome their entertainment division is going to be when they integrate it into the PS4.
Trying to increase the sale price.
Well, they've had crazy infighting in terms of what they're going to do with that.
Okay.
So there's different.
Yeah.
People in the company who want this thing.
That's never
I thought
good.
It was just an investor saying, hey, you guys should split up the company.
I had read that there was some talking about it. But yeah,
there's some discussion, but from an interview, or what, did Shuhei say it? Or was it Jack? Somebody. Or was it Adam Boys? It was something through Giant Bomb or IGN with an interview, one of the Sony heads, and they're like, yeah, like, we've talked about this, but we're working as one cohesive company. Like, this was something that was suggested by an investor. You know, Sony games will always live on. So basically just being like, don't worry, we're not going anywhere.
Can I tell you guys something really depressing? You guys may know this, but so Sony made a profit recently, right? Which was like, oh my God, they made a profit.
Wow.
And here are the two reasons why. Axel already knows one of them. They sold a massive amount of office space, which they had.
I knew that one.
And that was actually a huge contributor to their profit they made recently. The other thing is, and I heard this on Bloomberg News.
Can I just nerd out, like real estate nerd out for a second?
Do it.
They had a 1.1 million square foot office tower on 57th and...
So excessive.
Yeah.
And they sold it for like $1.5 billion.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And
3.9 million copies is a failure.
but wait. Here's the other thing that they
is
do.
Is it the yen?
What? No. It's in Japan.
Sony's number one seller in the last quarter of any product was life insurance.
Whoa.
Life insurance to old Japanese men who are going on the company's, you know, history and buying life insurance from them. It's like, what the fuck, guys? That's organic growth.
It's innovation, at least. Japanese people love insurance, though.
They do?
Seriously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. I mean, usually those companies just end up branching out into, like, spas and pachinko parlors and,
yeah,
you know, that
kind of generic Vegas
BS.
I think they're slowly letting their zaibatsu ways go. It's like slowly lurching towards, like, every step they take, they shed an additional layer of, yeah, like the many layered onion that is all of Sony's shit.
Yeah. That's unfortunate, though. I mean, in terms of like a Gibson standpoint, I would hate to see the zaibatsu go away. The last zaibatsu. The last of
You just named his next novel.
It's actually the sequel to The Last of Us.
That's right. That's where your Joel from N comes into play. But it's spelled with a 3 instead of an E in Joel.
With a hint of fungus.
So, I mean, okay, I guess we can talk about this for a bit. How do you guys feel about I've had some interesting discussions recently with a coworker about Eastern game philosophy and design. Like, and, you know, we've brought up a couple times the Square Enix, you know, Tomb Raider failure. I mean, do you feel like Japanese games are in a good place right now? Or do you think we have something more pressing to worry about than, you know, the continuing future of game consoles, and that being, you know, Japanese games still having an identity and a place?
I feel like Dark Souls and all those games is like where they're going. And I feel like, no, you disagree?
I'm jizzing.
Oh, okay.
Dark Souls, I discovered Dark Souls like a couple months ago. It is so good.
Yes, you're right.
And love, like, Dark Souls.
And, you know, maybe they can make some more good tactical RPGs like Fire Emblem. Maybe Nintendo will always have its identity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not including Nintendo, though. I mean, they're obviously in their own realm, and they don't publish on any. I'm talking more like the third party things like Capcom, Konami, Square Enix, like Tecmo Koei. What are they doing?
What was the last innovation from a major Japanese game developer in any of these areas? I mean,
not counting Nintendo, pretty much.
Not counting Nintendo.
I think Dark Souls.
But that wasn't a major developer.
Well,
Dark Souls was significant because it was a regression. I mean, it was it's an old school.
Yeah, that's very brilliant.
Borderline roguelike, super punishing, like traditional RPG with a stat system and a limited inventory.
So good.
And a bad translation.
Exactly.
Best fucking combat ever. Oh, I love that game.
Its sell is that it's old school.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's very clever.
That's what's been this calling card, if you forgive the bad metaphor, of Japanese games, I think, in the past, 5 years? What have they done? Meanwhile, Western games are steaming ahead.
I feel like there is something Eastern that I will always value, and that is maybe in decline right now. Or I think a lot of these companies are really big, and they got really complacent, and they stopped, like, hustling. And I think that a lot of the creators that were present in these companies that kind of gave them their identity have also moved on. Like, if you look at Square, like, you know, Nomura is still there, Tetsuya Nomura, but, like, everyone else who's important is gone. It's just a shell.
I challenge you to go read up on Square Enix.
Well, I mean, like, Kitase is still there, but the people who I like are gone.
The people who have made good games are not making games is kind of what Square is sitting at, like, right now.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, like, there's the guy who was like who worked on Final Fantasy IV is making, like, the DS games, and I love all those. But a lot of the people whom I like there have moved on or continue to move on. The model in Japan seems to be...
Are you just talking about the Gooch, essentially?
The Gooch and
well, who else is there? I guess so. Yeah, I guess him. But like, I'm also thinking of some of the musical people who have left. Not just what's his name? Jesus, I'm getting so tired. I can't remember. Who's the main guy who used to compose over there?
Yeah, you said Nomura once, so now my brain is fried.
Uematsu.
Yes, yeah.
And a couple of his other cohorts left. I just feel like, I don't know.
Hey, Theatrhythm was not a terrible thing.
Oh, Theatrhythm was fun. I like Theatrhythm. The other person who left, Yasunori Mitsuda. He left. The guy who made...
That's Xenogears, right?
Hold on, sorry. That's
the music
guy.
From Xenogears.
No, sorry, not Mitsuda. What is his name? Oh God, who's the guy who made Tactics?
Yeah, he's still there. He's still there. He's still there.
No, he's gone, dude. He left a while ago. He contracted with them to make the PSP remake of Tactics Ogre, but he left a long time ago. He left after FF12.
I thought he was just stuck in a closet somewhere. no joke.
He was a scriptwriter for the Wii game Mad World. Did mm-hmm. you know that?
Yeah, I thought he was. Oh wait, Mad World?
Yeah, the black and white Wii game.
Yeah, I remember it. I thought he was I thought he had some weird, other, awful, tangential touch in some Square product. But I don't know. I could be confusing with somebody else because I can't.
No,
he
worked on
name.
A level 5 game. What is his name?
Who are we talking about?
The guy who
Dark
made,
Cloud.
The guy who made Tactics Ogre and Final Fantasy Tactics.
Dark Cloud is off elsewhere doing way better work in the form of Ni No Kuni right now. Level 5 is
his
know,
name
finding...
is Yasumi Matsuno. That's his name.
Yasumi
Matsuno.
Matsuno. Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
so a lot of people have left.
Yeah, a lot of these people have left, and the big companies are just big and complacent and lack creativity.
Yeah. Inafune has left.
Yep.
Capcom. What's his name? Who has went to do fucking team?
Itagaki left Team Ninja.
No, not fuck Itagaki.
Kamiya
that is one person I do not care about.
Yeah, I hate him.
Yeah, Kamiya
left Capcom.
Yes, Kamiya. Yeah. But then he's went and did the Platinum things for a while. But then isn't he left Platinum?
No, he's still at Platinum.
Okay,
Platinum's awesome though. I like Platinum.
I love Platinum too.
Platinum made Bayonetta. They made Metal Gear Rising. What else did they make?
They made Vanquish, which is a fantastic game.
Mm-hmm.
What's Vanquish?
They made Anarchy Reigns, which is not a fantastic game.
they made
Wonderful 101.
Endless Space, or not Endless Space, Infinite Space for the DS.
Yeah, that was okay.
Yeah, it's a cool game.
What's the game that I'm going to play because it was free on PS3?
Vanquish.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Vanquish, yeah. It's so good.
Some people really love it. It's like a third-person shooter, as I understand. It's like has a real sense of
Jamie,
motion.
You'll hate it.
No, I think I like third-person shooters.
It's so weird, though. Well,
we love weird.
Maybe you'll... No, yeah. I mean, like, it has such good systems. I don't know. Maybe you'll like it. It's hard to say.
Is it the kind of game I would like, Griffin?
Maybe. Yeah, Axel, I think you and I would be on the same page where it's just like the good kind of dumb, like good kind of stupid ass anime Steve Bloom has like rocket boots on and he's an old man, ex-football player, American soldier. Yeah. Like this is my – so Vanquish, I love Vanquish. It's a super fun game. The mechanic is essentially you have
– Yeah, it's stupid. You'll love it.
Well, no, yeah. No,
I think you might have us mixed up here.
Let me get there here. I'll get there in a second. But let me just give you this straight here for a second. That's Vanquish. The mechanic is you essentially have like a fuel. Like you have some sort of resource and you can use it for two things. One, you slow down time. Two, you move extremely fast through the battlefield. So you like basically do this baseball rocket slide where you shoot around and take cover and
shit.
That's
awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very good. Sense of speed, really fun combat, like good third person action, cover based shooting, TPS. What makes it so fun is it's just dumb as shit. Like it is very anime, very J nonsense.
Oh, I think I may have actually seen this game. Did you show me this game?
Because I just downloaded it for free. It's free on PSN. It's free on PS Plus.
So here's what sold me on Vanquish, and that's you can shoot, you jump into cover, and you can sit behind cover. and you can press a button and your character will take out a cigarette and smoke it.
That sounds incredible.
Ruben, this sounds amazing.
No. But let me blow your minds even further. Then you press another button and he will throw the cigarette and discard it. And because of the low gravity of the area you're in, the cigarette floats a bit. But then the enemies will also track the cigarette as if it were a target, and then you have your moment to get out of cover and move away from it.
That sounds incredible.
That is never articulated in the game. It's just one of those things where you're like, why am I smoking behind cover? Then it happens. You're like, oh, so cool.
That's awesome.
I want that.
That's the second instance I can think of a marginally useful cigarette in a Japanese game.
They love useful cigarettes because all of them smoke like chimneys.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
oh, my God.
Funny.
Remember the smoking car on the Shinkansen? Jesus Christ.
I never walked in there because I didn't want cancer.
Oh, terrible. Oh, maybe that was the first time I went. Ugh, it was bad. So PS Plus has basically already paid for itself in terms of the games that I've downloaded. I've downloaded Vanquish. I downloaded like 3 or 4 indies. It's freaking awesome.
Yeah, keep paying attention to it because stuff comes and goes. And if you download it while it's still there, you get to keep it.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it.
I have the cloud. I don't know what it's doing, but every time I turn it on, it's like, this is what happened in the cloud when you were gone. We uploaded all your saves, and this happened, and we updated this part of the thing, and then this happened. Okay, here you go. Bye.
That is easily, I think, I would pay that fee just for that. Like, not even including these games. Like, the automatic updates for all my games, the 1 gig of cloud game storage so I can have my saves archived somewhere else is really comforting for me since I've lost systems before. Like, I like that a lot.
Oh, Griffin, update. So my PlayStation, if flipped on its side and placed directly in the way, in like the stream of my AC unit.
Oh, good. You've incorporated the secondary
works. Doesn't
fan.
Make any noise.
Yes. I was going to suggest that. I was going to say, did you buy a new fan?
Griffin, you have to reiterate your old advice. Just let it go.
Let it go.
But I do that too, Jamie. I have a small fan in my entertainment center to blow directly on my PlayStation 3 just to help it out.
Just get the other one. It was on sale for like $220.
Yeah, but then I can't play PlayStation 2 games.
Get a PlayStation 2.
They are expensive as shit.
You can get them on Sony's website, or not on their website. You can get them through like Walmart for $99. I just checked.
That is too much money for a PS2.
Now that says maybe. That might be true.
I would pay less than a controller for a PS3.
I went down the rabbit hole and I was looking at the specifics of my unit. Like I typed in the SKU or whatever it is that's on the back, and I was looking at like what Sony did. And people have all this weird extraneous information. It's like, the fan on your unit is not as good because Sony cheaped out and the fan only has 10 blades. On the original PlayStation, the fan had 13 blades.
Sounds about right.
But yeah, it's working. It's good. I'm keeping my fatty for now.
That's right, man. Fatties unite.
Fatties unite.
Super slim is the way to go, bros.
Fuck you, top loader.
I love it. It's so cool. You guys, okay. I want to show people my top loader.
It looks like a George Foreman grill in a good way.
Yes.
Right.
Is that even a thing?
It's so cool. I love how low tech and stupid it is.
I want it. I want that.
Yeah,
I want that.
It too.
But I just so love my symmetrical system set up right now where everything in my entertainment area is all capacitive.
I love how I need to rearrange my setup to play it because I need to take it out of its TV stand and put it in the middle of my room.
Well, Jeff and I were talking the other day, like we're super boned for when the next consoles come out because I have no idea how I'm going to fit my shit in there.
Yeah. I can't. I bought a stand for the Super Slim and I went to stand it up and it doesn't fit. So I'm fucked because the PS4 is going to be like as tall or taller when you stand it up. Yeah. So there's just no way. And I refuse to stack my consoles. Because
oh, hell no.
That's disgusting.
Savage.
I love that. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I don't know what I'm going to do because I'm going to have to pull out like – I like my setup right now because I have my centerpiece as my current consoles. And I have my stupid audio thingy that does my surround sound that I don't understand. And then I have all my other awesome old consoles around it. Like, I've got a Dreamcast and a Sega CDX and a GameCube and a Super Nintendo and, like, all these awesome things just, like, chilling, ready to go. But I'm going to have to put them away. I think I'm going to get some wall shelves and maybe put them up on, like, just, like, some single, like, spot shelves and do some tiered things and just put the system.
Griffin has the coolest built-in for all his games and shit. You should have him send you a picture. It's the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah, please do.
You should do something that involves drilling through your walls and running your cables through.
I've thought about this.
I should install a shelf in my media center. Yeah. Like, put another shelf of my own creation there.
You know what I just bought, Griffin? Showed Jeff. I showed Jeff this. He was unimpressed. I just bought LED mood lighting to mount on the back of my
impressed.
TV. And it can be any color you want. Or you can set it to spaz out and change colors. And I put it on when I play The Last of Us because it makes me feel less terrible.
Can you control it with your phone?
What?
Can you control them with your phone?
It has a little controller.
No, fuck that then.
You are the controller.
There was a very short period when I was like, how much money would it cost me to buy all those like Wi-Fi LED lights?
This cost me $40 at IKEA.
Have you seen those LED lights that you control through Wi-Fi?
No.
They're like, it's like $120 ish per bulb. You put them in wherever you have lights, and then you can adjust them with your phone.
That's freaking crazy.
It's the best.
I would highly recommend mood lighting. I have mine set on purple. The room is also purple. It's like a purple party.
In preparation for next gen, I bought a 60-inch plasma.
What?
For $800. Hold on. But then, after buying it, I decided I was making a huge mistake and returned it.
You returned that thing?
Yeah.
Jeff, I'm disappointed.
Well, the thing is, I told my girlfriend and she was like, what? Like, you're going to fit a 60-incher in here?
You know what?
That's what she said.
I've been lusting after TVs. 40 inches is a little too small for me, but I'm not going to buy... I'm pretty sure I'm not going to buy a new TV until 4K is affordable.
Really? Why? Why?
I don't need 4K.
Why do you want 4K? Why don't you just get a fucking 3D TV?
Have you ever looked at a 4K TV?
No, I'm in the Midwest, goddammit.
When you look at a 4K TV, it looks like you're looking at a printed image, even if you're 2 fucking inches away from the TV. They're really cool. And I looked at it. I went into the store not expecting to be blown away. I was like, whatever. Like, my iPad is basically that pixel density. But it was like, I don't know. It was pretty cool. The colors were amazing. Definitely not worth $4,000 for a 55-inch TV. But I'd pay a little more for it. I would.
I would pay for a plasma TV because I understand that they have really low... they have really like smooth motion compared to others.
As a proud owner of a 60-inch plasma TV, I highly suggest you get one.
Fuck! I should have gotten it.
Actually, no. In retrospect, in hindsight, I kind of wish I had went for LCD or LED. And that is solely because the black levels are too black for me.
I've never heard anyone say that.
It's just because I don't know if it's because I've got bad night vision or something, like, but whenever it's like the, hey, I'm playing this game and it's like, now calibrate this screen. Can you see this emblem? Okay. You shouldn't be seeing that emblem. Can you see it? And I'm like, no, what emblem are you talking about? It's like, well, we'll make it so you can kind of see it barely visible. And I'm like, well, I can't see it still. And they're like, well, maybe you need to adjust your TV settings. I'm like, well, I don't, what are you doing here?
We have a 60-inch right here, and it's pretty good. It was like a budget one when we got it. It's an LCD. It's not an LED. I like it a lot. I think that the black levels are not nearly good enough. I think that in general it has a kind of washed out thing going on. It's a sharp aqua, so I think it's pretty good, but I would much rather have a plasma.
We have a 55-inch LED, and that is tremendously good.
Yeah.
The motion is really, really smooth. The blacks are really deep. The whites are really white. And the thing generates zero heat.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, plasmas get hella hot. So if you have it in a small room, you know.
And the LEDs don't draw very much power, which yeah. is nice.
They actually brought down the power consumption on modern plasma televisions. Of course, now they're all but discontinuing them. But the more recent ones have energy consumption.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've got a Samsung that I got maybe 3 years ago.
It's
gorgeous. I mean, it the power, it's got the energy saver shit, but I mean, it still runs hot. Like I can be in there, it's in the basement, and I'm just kind of worried, like, if I ever brought it to, you know, ground level in the summer, it might be too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that. Yeah, mine was also a Samsung, and it was a nice deal, but literally, I went to the store and it would not fit in Jessica's car, and I panicked. I was like, I can't do this. And I measured my space, and it's kind of a small space, and I'd be relatively close to the TV, which doesn't bother me, but I know it would bother her. And I just.
Wait, I need to hear more of this story. So, like, you went to the store, you bought this thing, you tried to put it in your car.
I follow a website called Slick Deals, which is basically like a deal aggregator, and they had the TV on Slick Deals. And I bought the TV for store pickup.
Oh.
And I went to the store, and it would not fit in her car. So I scheduled a delivery.
And then you're like, no.
Well, I work overnight at work sometimes, and I bought it during an overnight shift without being able to measure my space. And so then I went to the store, checked it out, couldn't fit in the car, scheduled the delivery, went home, remeasured the space, and was like, fuck, this is going to take up a significant amount of space. I don't think I can do this without upsetting Jessica, so I'm just going to cancel the whole thing. And I awkwardly went in and canceled my delivery that I had rescheduled.
What did you say? I tried to put this in the car.
I just said I'm going to cancel it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you guys aren't excited. The new systems will support 4K.
Not for most games. Almost. Look, sorry, go ahead, Griffin.
I was going to say, I can't be positive about this, but I think I just heard in some interview somewhere from somebody some anecdote of, like, the console, you know, companies saying, we're not against it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, The Order, which they showed for PS4, is running 1920 by 800. It's not even native 1080p.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of a lot of pixels to push for something that's only got one GPU and...
Yeah.
I know, but from experience, I went up from a full HD screen to a 2560 by 1600 display.
Yeah.
And I had to turn settings down.
Yeah.
I have a gig and a half of VRAM on each of my cards, and I did not have enough to push that many pictures.
Yeah. The resource cost is going to be intense. And
so you guys don't think that. So there's no real reason game-wise to buy a 4K TV.
I think a 4K TV is going to be a lost. That's going to be that person that you knew
disc?
In like it, no, it's going to be like that person you knew in 1993 that had a projector in their basement. You know, you're like, why? Like, and they're like, it can be any size.
I think 4K will catch on, but I don't think it's going to catch on for like another 5 years because there's just no content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well, Netflix was 720 for a long ass time. They just started rolling out 1080 like a year ago.
It's true.
Right. I mean, then when do you get to the uncanny valley, so to speak, of television? Like, when is what you're seeing on the TV going to hit that, like, it doesn't matter anymore spot?
Yeah.
I think 4K will be an improvement, but I just don't think there's going to be, I don't think there's going to be the will, and I don't think that, and certainly in terms of games development, the resource cost in terms of like GPU resources is just going to be intense.
So if you're a movie buff, I think there will be things for you. I don't know
if
how.
If you want to rebuy all your shit.
But no. I mean for new movies because they're shot in 4K. So it'll be easy for them to.
Yeah, but 4K can mean a lot of different things.
No, but the red camera, which is like the camera for this generation of movie, shoots in whatever it's 2000p or whatever it is, which is 4K.
Yeah, 2040p.
It's, yeah. So I think it'll be easy for studios. But can you put that on a Blu-ray? Isn't the Blu-ray already? Isn't it already full at a normal 1080p?
A dual layer Blu-ray?
Oh, maybe a dual layer Blu-ray.
Well, actually, it's like 40 gigs or something.
Yeah, it's close to 50. It's like 42.
Yeah, 44.
All I can say is that it looked good. didn't look $4,000 good. And I saw the Sony one, which is like the real fucking deal. It was
it's like the iPad, dude. It's like, how much shit is there that's actually, I mean, it's awesome, but how much shit is there that's actually optimized for it?
It's very true.
You're talking about the Retina thing for the, like, the MacBook Pro?
Yeah.
Among other things.
Stuff
which
like
I have.
Stuff
but
like
but here's the guy at the store was like, hey, you like that? Let me show you something. And he showed me
because that's what TV salesmen are.
That sounds like everybody in New Jersey, right?
Hey, you want this TV?
Then he just stabbed you.
He made me do cocaine and then he stabbed me. He showed me a 1080p hockey game. I didn't ask for this. He just showed me. So, but it did look better. He was like, the TV does the thing, and then there's another thing and makes it better, and it looked like HD plus.
It's like what the Retina stuff does. I mean, it adds a couple more pixels.
I don't know what it was doing. It was doing something.
It jixels it. Jixels the
pixels. How many transistors does it have?
It uses vacuum tubes.
Yes. I spent $400 on a device which literally uses vacuum tubes not very long ago.
Audio.
These kids are crazy.
Axel and I have descended into the depths of depravity of, like, audio goodness.
I have not taken the bait.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I did buy myself a Pikachu 3DS XL.
Money well spent.
Yeah,
that'll be worth something one day.
It's already worth like $380 on Amazon.
Wow. Oh, speaking of crazy, stupid expenditures. So Jeff, I know I mentioned to you that like I swear I saw that copy of Xenoblade Chronicles for like $28.
Uh huh.
It's gone now.
Oh no!
And every place I go, it has like figured it out because, you know, I'm like I'm scouting out these spots, and they're like,
"Yeah,
no, like we would pay you $70 for that game." I'm like, GameStop has those words have never came out of that place's mouth.
If GameStop will give you $70, it's probably worth like $500.
Yeah, it's the Rainbow Dinosaur Beanie Babies of video
games. Pretty much. It's one of the. There are not very many video games out there these days that. But that's one of them.
God, I was so short-sighted with that too. Like when that was released, and it was like it's a GameStop exclusive, and I was like, "Well,
you know,
I wish I got this."
I wish I had Metroid Prime Trilogy for the Wii.
Why?
Because it's really rare, and it was three games for $50, and now it's like $180.
Mm. Well, that's not too bad, I guess.
$180.
Did I ever tell you guys how I made over $1,000 on Beanie Babies because I found a bin of rainbow dinosaurs for like market price for like list price, like they're like $8.99 each.
Wow!
And then I bought three of them and I brought them back to New Jersey and sold them at Romance Emporium for $600 each.
Jesus!
This is when I was 12 years old.
Holy!
And then you just spent it all on blow.
I had a Scarface sized mountain of cocaine.
And by cocaine, you mean Warhammer.
That is a great expenditure, Warhammer, and all for all that money.
Yeah, Warhammer. I spent it.
I have a friend who takes old Warhammer pieces that have been they don't make them anymore. He uses different solvents to melt the paint off, and then he uses something else to melt the glue off.
I've heard about this, like people there's like retired
load of money.
Yeah, there's like retired pieces, and people go to the lengths of like, yeah, you're right, like you're stripping them down and then like chop shopping these fucking Warhammers and then reselling them at a premium because they don't make, you know, Tigris, the Master Chief librarian of the Butt Marines
anymore. Exactly. My friend bought an orc thing, which I actually owned, and I think I still may own. It came out when we were kids, and he stripped it down, and he sold it for like $350.
Jeez.
Yeah. So there's money to be made there.
Yeah, I've been thinking about digging my army out and selling it.
Do it.
So then I could go buy video games. Because I really want a copy of Earthbound.
A real copy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
How much is a copy of Earthbound?
Roughly $120 to $255.
Yeah, they're hard to find.
SNES?
Yep, SNES. Yeah, just keep checking those thrift stores. You might find them.
Do you have one?
No, I didn't know about it.
Dude, the thrift stores here suck. They've gotten too smart for their own damn good.
I hate that. Yeah, I haven't actually played Earthbound, but I will re-endorse Mother 3 as the greatest fucking game ever made.
Oh, speaking, this is something I was going to talk to Jamie about. Speaking of greatest fucking RPG ever you could play ever, forever, since you have about a month to do whatever you want, I highly... also, since you like Giant Bomb, yes. Go play Persona 4 while you watch them do their endurance run of Persona 4.
Is that up?
It was like the first thing they ever did for their site.
Oh, okay. Awesome. All right, I will do that. That sounds like a fun thing because I've been wanting to play Persona 4. But didn't you say that Persona 3 was the one to play?
No. Persona 4 is the one to play.
Persona 4 is the one to play. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And if anybody has ever had delusions or desires to be a Japanese schoolboy, that is the game for you.
Every day.
Is that on PSP?
It's on PSP.
It's on Vita and it's on PS2.
I don't have either.
I have a PS2. I would lend you my PS2.
Maybe. I'll have to decide because there's so many things that I want to do.
Why don't you just buy a Vita? Vibrant console that's doing very well.
I've heard that it is worth the price of a Vita.
I love the Vita.
However, I disagree with that only on the basis of nostalgia and that the voice actor for Chie, the girl who I had my relationship with, has changed. So I don't know how much I feel about that anymore.
That's terrible.
I think the Vita is awesome.
I would buy one if I had the money. I like the way it feels. It's nice.
Yeah. And indie games are coming to it. Spelunky.
Spelunky!
I'm going to play so much Spelunky.
No, you won't.
I played like a million hours of Spelunky too.
I got spelunkied out.
I will not get spelunkied out.
That sounds like when you go to a whorehouse and you come away with like a disease.
You got the spelunkied out.
Oh my god.
Well, I think we should probably wrap it up here, guys. Sounds like we're kind of hitting the brick wall, although it has been 2 hours of fantastic discussion.
I had so much fun.
Yeah,
I love this.
Awesome.
Shit.
I'm just insanely tired.
Yeah. I actually took Benadryl in the middle of the recording.
Oh Jesus.
So I've been getting loopier and loopier and more tired and more tired. It's now it's just insane.
I've been groping him for about an hour. He didn't know what's happening.
Well, I think I may go grab another beer and play some The Last of Us and see if I don't try and finish that up.
Favorite games ever.
Oh god, so good.
Yeah. So thanks guys. You should play Persona 4, all of you, if you haven't, because it's one of the best games ever.
No.
Well,
I want Jamie to play it and talk about it because I'm interested to hear what his opinion is.
I'll play Catherine.
Don't play Catherine. Don't play Catherine.
Okay. It's a box pushing puzzle.
I know, but
no,
it looks kind of cool. But I just can't put those. Talk about ludonarrative dissonance.
Yeah,
putting on my game journalism hat again. But that is some straight up intense ludonarrative dissonance right there.
I'll find a way to play Persona 4.
Do it the right way. If you play Catherine, you play Persona 4, and then you play Catherine in the hopes that it's going to be good, and then you're profoundly disappointed. And then you just cling to it like debris in the water, you know, staying afloat, you know, shouting out the good things that it did, and then hoping that they do that in Persona 5.
Can I point out that there is still no Persona 5, there's still no Persona title on current gen consoles,
excluding
Vita.
Yeah.
Crazy town.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Strange turn.
All right.
Well, noted. So go play Persona 4. Also, The Last of Us is a pretty good game, too. And so is Blood Dragon. So thanks, guys, for talking this week. It's been a ton of fun.
I'll see you guys
in the future.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the year 2007.
Oh, I thought you'd go with the year 2000 from Conan O'Brien.
No. For the Blood Dragon trailer.